Just to summarize before we go on, the question pertaining to the Shunra, which had two versions. In the first version, the mice gang up on the cat. Now that is something, the whole nature of the thing is something which doesn't happen. So it is contrary to the expectations, contrary to the laws of nature. So it's, even that's the question whether the term accident would make sense. So that's a shinui. But it's interesting, as we pointed out, the more you want to absolve the shomer, the shoel, so to speak, by saying that it's something beyond the scope of anybody's anticipation, the more you're going to make him chayiv. Because that's the question. Is that considered mesa machos malacha? So that's the way we frame the question is shinui. When there's a shinui, the shoel must swear that he was not mashana. So if there was a shinui, you take a look at Rashi on Tzadik Zayin Amid Aleph, where he says kahai gav namai. In my opinion, that kahai gav namai is the first case, the case of the mice ganging up. Chavor alei achbrei. That's and Rashi says kahai gav namai mi havi mesa machmas malacha olo. Is that to be considered mesa machmas malacha or not? Which is basically the way we interpret it. The Ritva also it says. In the first case, that kibin de lo pasha pater, the mesa machmas malachahu, that this is considered mesa machmas malacha. Well, take a look at them above. Become a bayle the Rav Ashi, kahai gavna. In other words, the divrei maschil in the ritva, who gavra the shol shunra, mechavre, chavor ole achbre vekotlu, become a bayle the Rav Ashi, kahai gavna mai. We have a mesa machmas malacha lo, is it mesa machmas malacha? Now, in the next case, where he's talking about the second version, where it ate too many achbarim, so unless less dina v'less daina kolomer the mesa machmas malacha shelo b'pshiyahu upata, that it's mesa machmas malacha. So there, it's not the issue. Of course, it's mesa machmas malacha, but is that pshiyah or not pshiyah? And we said that Tosus also supports us because the Tosus kihai gav namai doesn't say specifically on the Tosis, which the first case or the second case, but we learned that he's applying it to the second case because the problem over here is there were too many achbarim. The too many achbarim, it seems to be part, that's the problem in the second case. There was just too many achbarim. And he just ate too many. In the first case, it wasn't that there were too many because that's a change in their behavior. It has nothing to do with there were too many. It doesn't matter. There the issue is that mice don't attack the cat. So that was the change. So I think that this Tosis is referring to the second case. The second case, then, the issue where it ate too many mice, so then that's Mesa Machmas Malacha. Because that's the Malacha, and that's like any case of Mesa Machmas Malacha. The only thing is it a Pshia? The question, so what's the question as to whether it's a Pshia or not? Is that there was a shinui. So when we say that the shoel is chayev because he was mashana, so is that measured purely in terms of the, well, there was a shinui. There's a shinui, so it's connected to him. I mean, he's, objectively speaking, he's the cause of that shinui. If you say that that he becomes the cause of the shinui because he brought it there. So then it doesn't matter. But if you say it's a matter of a fault, see, is pshia a matter of, objectively speaking, there was a pshia. It doesn't matter that it was, it's true that it wasn't, it's not measured in terms of, it's not measured. In other words, there was a shinui. Whenever there was a shinui, see, even though it's not your fault, it doesn't matter. In other words, if pshia is determined by causation, that is that it's not pshia in the simple sense that it's your fault, but it's your responsibility. So the fact is that a shinui occurred. So where a shinui occurred, so it's pshia at the bottom, and mesa machmas malacha is not going to help you. That is to say that the Mesa Machmas Malacha presupposes no shinui, no change. And it doesn't matter, it's not a matter of fault. It's just it's a din in Mesa Machmas Malacha. See, Pshia is a din in Mesa Machmas Malacha. Means to say that there was no shinui. And then you can claim Mesa Machmas Malacha. But if there was a shinui, so then you can't have Mesa Machmas Malacha. Okay? That would be the... So here there was a shinui. That's the question. Here there was a shinui. It's, that doesn't matter that you can claim, well, how was I supposed to know? Doesn't matter. There was a shinui. Or no. You see? Or no. The fact of shinui is that you're chayev because of your pshius. You see? So then, that's the... In other words, that you're chayev because you did something you weren't supposed to do. So therefore, it's a penalty to the shoel, so he's a poshea. You see, if you're going to say that it's a poshea, that the shoel is a poshea, so then he's not a poshea because this is not something that you can anticipate. How many mice are there? That's not considered his fault. That's not his responsibility. But if you say that the shinui removes it, it's a din in Mesa Machmas Malacha, so then it doesn't matter. It has nothing to do with that. It doesn't matter whether it's your fault or not. You can't claim the Mesa Machmas Malacha because the animal overworked itself. May not have been your fault, but there was a shinui in the conditions of the Malacha. That's the issue. A shinui in the conditions of the Malacha. Unbeknownst to you. Yeah, but so what? Doesn't matter. Now we're going to go further. Amar Rava. Haiman the boy lemishal midi michavrei the lifter. This is a very interesting word. It's a little bit strange the way it expressed itself, because on the surface it seems like a little bit of trickery over here. But let's study the Gemara. The Gemara is saying that the person that wants to borrow something from his chaver and to be putter, that is because of Ba'olavimo, Neimalei, Ashkian Maya. You should say to him, well, get me a glass of water. Davi Sheila Bivalam. And that renders the Sheila Bivalam. Now, obviously, whenever you borrow something, you always have the option of Ba'olavimo factor. But that's no... Why did the Gemara say that? Anybody that wants to borrow and doesn't want to be... responsible, so just borrow the owner. What do you have to give us this particular Eitzah? It appears to be that this is some kind of an Eitzah. I mean, there's a Chiddush over here. Let's put aside the issue of whether it's ethically correct or not for the time being. Although I haven't seen anybody that raises that question. But let's put, it doesn't matter. Let's put it aside. So what's the Chiddush? So we've already learned Balavimo, right? So if I want to borrow something from you, and I don't want to be liable, I'll ask you to do me a favor and make sure that that's in effect before or at the time of, but not after, as we'll see. Okay, so what's the Chiddush of Rava then? And if he's sharp, that is the one who's the owner of the object, the lender. Neimalei, so he'll say to him, She'il, it should be Beresha, not Bedisha. Shal Beresha, V'hadar Ashkayach. He'll answer him and say, no. I know that trick, so to speak. First, let's do the loan, and then I'll get you a glass of water. The questions that I had were basically, from a strictly analytical standpoint, so well, what's the Chiddush? What's Rava coming to teach me? Obviously, we know that. If you could put two and two together, once we know that there's a phenomenon of ball of emo, so then tell him to do some work for you, and that's it. There must be a Chiddush in this. That's the first thing. I mean, the second question is really a separate question, but it sort of jumps out at you, is that the Gemara seems to be suggesting a little bit of a trickery over here. Because the Gemara is saying, if the other guy, in other words, if you want to be exempt, it's like a loophole. And then if the other guy's smart, he'll catch you. Yeah, but what if he's not smart? That seems, so then you got away with something. But, I mean, that could, in my opinion, it could reach the level of a shaila, because you were successful, and he got you the drink of water unbeknownst, and then the object was broken, and he wants you to pay, and he says, no, you got me, remember the drink of water? It's ball of emo. I mean, is that okay?
You could be borrowing
it seems like some type of Gnevas Das. Or it seems like Mekach Tos. I mean, She'ela is a Kenyan. A Kenyan is a Das. So, and let me ask a general question then. Let me ask a general question. When a person borrows an object from somebody else, okay, so if he borrows the object without all of Imo, so then I don't, you don't have to go through all the halachos. I mean, that's, if anything happens, so you got it with the Bezdin. Bezdin will say, I have to pay. But when he borrows with Baal of Imo, let's say he has a little, not just a drink of water, but he has a real job to do, okay? Is he obligated, I mean, at that point, is he obligated to inform the Shoel that what the halachos are? That, if you do it this way, so now I'm going to be completely exempt. Are you obligated to inform the shoel, the marshal rather? Is the shoel obligated to inform the marshal when he establishes Baal of Imo that bear in mind, because let's say he says, okay, fine, I'll do the job for you. But am I obligated to tell him, okay, but you should know then that I'm going to be exempt. Not only is he going to be exempt, he's going to be exempt even for Pshia, as we've learned. One can say that the Gemara is just looking at it purely technically speaking. But there is another aspect, and the Gemara is not telling you that you should do it or that it's okay to do it. But there is a general principle of, Atu Barishyaskin, and what are we talking? The Gemara, we're talking about Rishayim. Or it's not out of place for the Gemara to make a halachic point and then to put in the Hashkah. For example, in Brachos, the issue about whether a woman can say the Birkas HaMazon for the husband. That's a suffix, whether women are chayav d'araisa or not, or the ben, the child, can make it for his father. So it depends. If the ben sometimes can make birkas hamazon for his father. If the ben ate an amount which would be chayav d'araisa, and the father ate an amount which is chayav d'rabbanan, so then it's both the rabbanan. But then the Gemara sort of says, "Tava ma'ara, lamisha ishta uvanav mavarchimlo." That like it's a person, it's a curse. A curse for someone who's so ignorant that his wife and child has to make the brachas for him. So it's making a moral point. In other words, okay, you're right. And that's not, no one's doing anything wrong in that case. But the Gemara, normally, if it's connected to some hashkafic point, so it makes the point. Why couldn't the Gemara say, if you want to borrow and not be liable if you just did such and such? But, if you have to rech gemach, you shouldn't do that. The Gemara doesn't seem to have any problem with this. Our good points being raised that we took up earlier this year, Shalal LaRiva. But that was an abstract question where the Gemara was asking if somebody borrowed the animal for purpose of bestiality. Does this come under the heading of She'ela? Well, there were two different ways of learning it. Is it Baal Avimo? Is it subject to Baal Avimo? Or is it She'ela altogether? We learned that the question was whether it's She'ela altogether, because is it any usage? Or there's a certain objective category of usage. So this is a deviation, it's an aberration. And the Gemara didn't mention, there was no need to, that a curse should come to anyone who would borrow it for that, because there's no need to mention that. The Gemara was just setting that up as an abstract situation, just to learn the principle from it. So suppose somebody would borrow it for that, something which is such an aberration. Therefore, the Gemara didn't have to make the point that whoever would do that would be a terrible person. Obvious, that's pretty obvious. And this is different, though. Here, the Gemara is expressing, Rav is expressing it as if you're smart, so to speak. If you want to, it's like advice. It's not an inquiry. He's making a chiddush. He's making a chiddush. What's the chiddush? But he seems to be presenting it as though if you want. Now, that seems to be not discouraging you from doing it. He's not saying it, but the Eved, if you did this, he's saying it, if you want to do it, go ahead and do it. Like, it seems to be okay. When the Gemara is talking in that way, it does seem a little bit strange that if there was anything wrong with this, the Gemara would have mentioned it. The Rambam in Perek Sheni, Hashelu Pikadam, Hashel Bivalam, Afilu Nignav O Avad Bipshia Pater. So one who borrows with the balam, even if it's stolen or lost, b'pshia, he's pater. Shenemar in ba'al of imo lo yishalim. Uvilvah she yishal ha ba'alam tchila. But the condition is that he borrows the Balaam first. Oh, ima chefet, or together, simultaneous, or the Baal came first. Kemoshe biyarnu. V'yechara shehoza Balaam, oshe sachran. Whether he borrows them or rents them. V'yechara shehoza les ha-Balaam, liyosa ha-malacha, oshe shalon v'sachran l'malacha cheras. Now, the other question, that, of course, that's a machlokas. One man, the Yom, and the Gemara held that it's only when you borrow him to help you with that particular malacha. Which, as we said, from a common sense point of view, makes more sense. But, no, it doesn't matter. Even if he's doing work in your house and you're working in the field, it doesn't mean that he's been borrowed to help you with the object. Then he says, Afilu amar l'chaveru hashkeni mayim, even if he said to his friend, get me some water, v'sha'al imenu behemto, and he borrowed the behema, v'shkeyu, and he gave him the water, v'nasan lo asa behema. So he gave him the water, and then he gave him the animal. Hareza shele bevalim upata. Moshach habehema b'tchila v'yachach eshkeyu ain a shele bevalim v'chein kol kiyotze b'zeh. You see from the Rambam that there's an afilu over here. So this is a chiddush that I might not have thought that way. So what is the chiddush of this particular case? Now Lou is suggesting that the chiddush does not reside in the fact that he's getting him a glass of water. It's rather in the sincerity. That's not mashma from the Rambam, though. The Rambam did not, and the Afilu didn't mention that even if he's just doing it as a ploy. Lou wanted to suggest like this, that there's a legitimate phenomenon of borrowing them. You're borrowing him because you need him for something. And it just so happens that you're borrowing his object, and then it just so happens that it becomes Balavim on his pata. But if he's doing it specifically for the pater, because he doesn't want to be chayav for the object, so then it wouldn't be good. But then you should have made that point, even with something the normal. Why do you have to introduce the Hashkei Mayim thing? The Ram doesn't say that he's just doing it for that reason. The Ram, you could have said that if I'm bringing him over to water the grass. Any malacha. And then the point should have been, because then it would have been a big chiddush. Then the point should have been that b'med devar mamurim, that the shoel didn't do this as a ploy for the exemption. He did it for the. But let's ask that question. I mean, it's a good point. You see, if Lou's point was correct, it should have been formulated different, because you didn't need to introduce the drinking the water thing, the getting me a glass of water thing. You could have stuck with the existing cases, which are basic. You know, tasks, jobs I have for you to do. And then you should have made the afilu, even if he's only doing it for that reason, like the Rama said, and even if you're Peshia. Because you would have thought that Shia, but why should Balavimo help? No. Nope. And even if he only brings him over because he wants the exemption, he doesn't really need him. I could water the grass myself. Okay? Okay, so what we see is that's not the chiddush. But let's deal with it though. Why not? Why not? Why wouldn't that be a good point? Why wouldn't that be an issue? The halacha of Baal Avimo establishes a halachic category of Baal Avimo, and you can't go into a person's motivations. There's no din in motivation over here. It's a halachic reality. What's the difference? And whether that was the intention or not the intention. It's not so simple. We don't really know. We didn't really philosophically explain this kind of the way Baal Avimo operates. It's not so simple to understand why. Just because I did something for you, and the owner is getting penalized for being a really nice guy. He's lending the object and he's doing him a favor. And because if I didn't do the favor, then you're responsible for all the damages. Since I was a nice guy and I did you the favor, it's Bolivim and your partner. So it's not that simple to understand. Whatever, we'll put that aside for the time being. But it doesn't really matter. Once there's a halachic mechanism of Bolivimo, so I don't have to show her what's your kavana. It's a sheila bevalim or sheila shelo bevalim. That's it. And if there are people out there that when they borrow objects, they're bedafka going to ask the guy to come and do a task for him because they want to be exempt. So that's the way it is. I mean, the owner can't tie it that you didn't really need me. It's for the owners, and the owner should say no. Well, that's what he means by piker, that the owner should say no. This is just off the record, I mean, so to speak, that practically speaking, basically, if a guy doesn't know halacha, So on these, there are certain things you can trick them. On this thing, you can definitely trick them. Like you ask to borrow something. And someone is not really religious or non-religious. He doesn't really know. He didn't learn. And then you work it out that he should do, you know, do, and you ask him to do a favor. You work, you know, and then something happens and it breaks. And you may have even been negligent. And the guy says, "Well, pay me for it." And you just say, "I'm pata, halachli." He said, "What are you talking?" You know, let the guy be outraged. And he said, "No, there's this concept of balavimo, etc. This would be a big chilul Hashem. This would be an outrage. A person would walk away hating Judaism, saying, what kind of a halachic, you use these halachic tricks? First of all, the whole thing doesn't make sense. And I was penalized for being a nice guy. I mean, if a Jew is not allowed to act that way. Just an aside. And it could be that in the course of doing so, it could lead to a Chilul Hashem. Before we try and explain, we have the Shita Mekubetzos who brings down the Rav Yonason. Nemele Ashkayin Maya. Kolomar, Bioso Kli Atzma. That is to say, with that Kli. Ma'omerlo Tishali Imha Kli. And he says, be borrowed to me with the kli. V'kivin dehavi b'sha she'ela, and since he was with him b'sha she'ela, the time of the bar, lo tzarech l'mehevei b'sha shvira mesa. Okay? V'im kli she'en derech lishtos bo, and if it's a kli, which you don't use for drinking, could go mora, o pesel b'kardam, you know, like a shovel or something like that, or a pickaxe, whatever. Omer lo, so then he says to him, he's giving other examples. He shayali im kardumcha shetoli chehu lebesi, that you'll bring it to my house. V'ipikeich idach lemele meshoch zeh kli tchila. Now if the other person is smart, then he says to him, you, to make a kinyan, you first take the kli. V'yachkach eser etzoncha lashkoscha. And afterwards I'll do that. Lashkoscha bo. O lo licha lebescha. V'su lo mekarya she'el bevalam. And then it's no longer called Shele Bevalim, Kedetanan. Hoyimu b'shashfu rumesa. We learned that even though the Baal was with him when it broke, when the object died or broke, tzarech sheyimu b'shashela. He has to be with him b'shashela. What's interesting about this is that he seems to be saying that this concept of drinking water is when he uses that very kli. And that's not the way we've been learning it. That's not the way the Rambam learns. That's not the way... In other words, when we say that Rava, according to Rava's Chiddush, that a person that wants to be putter doesn't want to have to pay if he's a shoel, so at the time of the shayla, let's ask them to get a drink of water, but it's not that the kli that he's using, it's not what you're borrowing. You're borrowing his animal, but he's serving you water and he's giving you the animal at the same time. You see? So that is one has nothing to do with the other. What's interesting about Rabbi Yonasan is that he seems to be holding no, that this concept is limited. That is because that works when it's with that kli, that he's serving the water. But this leads us to a question of Rabbi Yonasan. And the question is, Mamavshach, I mean, if you hold of the principle of Rava, whatever it is, that merely serving me a glass of water is sufficient. So what difference does it make whether that's the object you're borrowing or not? It should work either way. And if you're going to tell me that it's not, you'll say that no, that he holds that this type of a thing of serving water is not enough to make it ball of emo. Okay, so then why should it work if that's the clue? What seems to be the inyan over here, the issue, the chiddush, afilo. Let's ask ourselves this question now. What Rebbe was trying to do was sort of like extend. This seems to be like a pretty lenient extension of the idea of Ba'al Avima. Because when we talk about Ba'al Avima, we're talking that he's contracted to do some malacha for you. So then the question is, well, what constitutes malacha? I mean, you would assume, we didn't ask the question, but you would assume that there's some kind of a malach involved. But is this, I'll ask another question. Rava here is extended. Rava has extended the concept. Because this is much, much less, whatever word you want to use, of a malacha, just get me a glass of water. If you ask me to go in the kitchen and fill up the water and bring you a glass of water, it's not that the people wouldn't call that a malacha. I'm borrowed to you, man. It's like a big chiddush. But let's go one step further then. Is there anything that Rebbe would say would not constitute valiyum? For example, let's say there's a box of tissues over there. I said, pass me a tissue. Or pass me that sefer. And I'm borrowing your object. I'm borrowing your object and pass me that sefer. Would that be Bala Vimo? Suppose I ask you, tell me the time. What time is it?
Well, there's no exchange.
Or let's say you have him come over to keeping you company would be an interesting kind of a thing. Like babysitting for your child. Let's put it that way. Babysitting for your child. That's nishal. That I would say is nishal. I'm not giving you the category. We're just considering different possibilities. To come over and visit with you, if you're friends, that's not nishal. That's friends. I don't think that's going to be why? Where's the bala? Where's the shayla here? There's no shayla.
You could be like a nebbi.
Let's put it this way. There's a line of demarcation between a favor and a malacha. Nobody considers certain things to be a malacha. If you ask a guy what time is it, and he tells you, it's not a malacha. I mean, you'll thank him, it's perfunctory, but it's not like a nishallah. That's, I think, the other side. That Rava's extending the category, but the category has a limit. I think the issue is that the question would be, would such a thing have a shame malacha? In order for it to be considered nishal, what's nishal? Nishal means to do the malacha. That the owner is borrowed to me. I have an arrangement with him. The arrangement, of course, has to be with something which would be a malacha. See, it doesn't have to be skilled. It could be unskilled to sweep the floor. But that's a malacha. That's something which everybody agrees is a malacha. So there's an entity of she'ela there. You have to have an entity of she'ela. Hashkeni Mayim could be a service, could be included. A waiter, for example, brings a glass of water. So that is chiddush. That even though in this situation, to ask somebody to get you some water is not necessarily a malacha, but it's efficient service. It's a shear in service. It's efficient service to be rendered bala vimo. Even though, objectively speaking, it may not be considered a malacha. But here we have the position of Rabbi Yonasan. But what's the machlokas? The Ashkeni Mayim has a tsura to it. It has to have a certain tsura, which could render it as a malacha in certain contexts. In the ordinary social situation, if I ask for a glass of water, I mean, it's not a big deal. But there's a tsura of going to fetch water. So then that could be part of the obligations and responsibilities. A waiter, for example. You see, so it does have the tsura of a malacha to it. It has to have something. But if I just ask you what time it is and you tell me, I mean, that's not that's a favor. Or even pass a tissue. That's not considered a malacha. Without Rava, it seems that it's a little bit inexact. I don't have all the exacts over here. But malacha would be, malacha is defined different ways, different places. We're not talking about Shabbos, obviously. Hilchos Shabbos, where it has to be according to certain criteria. What's a malacha? But, for example, on the term job doesn't apply on Shabbos. It's nothing to do with a job. You just light a match. That's a malacha. It has to do with the creative aspect of the activity. Here, I would say it's more like a job. Something which would be a job. I did a job for you. Something which people would regard as a job. That person might hire someone for that. You see? It's something you would hire somebody to do. That's what I would say would be the criteria before Rava comes along. Because there's got to be a shear. What's Bala Vimo? He's in my employ, or he's doing it as a favor. It doesn't matter whether I'm renting him, okay, or whether I'm borrowing him, but it's for a job. I have a job that needs to be done. That's how we said it until now, because we didn't have... But then, of course, see, every category, you have to draw the line, and what's the minimum? Now, the Chiddush of Rava, the Afilu, is that even though this is not a job... You're not going to hire a guy to go get you water, but it has the tzura. The activity has the tzura of a malacha. Let's put it this way: it's a shimush. a lot of things, like if give me some legal advice or other advice, yeah, that would be Bala Vimo. Put a different way, without Rava, it would be something which would have the characteristic and the dimension of a job that you'd bring somebody, you know, you'd hire somebody to do, or borrow somebody to do as a favor. Here, it doesn't have the dimension, but it has the form. That's what I would say Rav is saying. It doesn't have the dimension because one time, go get me some water, that's not, I can get it myself, but it's a favor. I people would call it a favor. And the next case would be where it doesn't have either of those factors. It's true, you're doing something for me, but it doesn't have the form or the dimension, the characteristics of a malacha, of a malacha at any level. I want to, with regard to the point of Rava, that type of a thing is very complex, in my opinion, when you're trying to learn conceptually. Because he gives you an example of a case. If he just did such and such, so then that's considered Bala Vimo. And it's sort of like coming out of nowhere, like, well, okay, what's the point? You know, well, not just what's the point, what's the category? What do you walk away from? What's the Havamina, so to speak? What's the argument? What's the issue? We can see that there's an issue, especially with Rabbi Yohanan, because he doesn't learn it in the standard way. He learns that it's talking about such a thing would be acceptable to be considered Bala Vimo only with that particular object. I would imagine then he would say that if you're borrowing an animal to plow with and you just say, give me water, then it wouldn't work. So you see that it's a controversial thing. Okay. Our basic approach was that where do you draw the line? What type of a service, so to speak, or any action that the owner would do for you would be sufficient to render it into Ba'ala Vimo? That's a legitimate question. So certainly that's the general area. Now, I would say that, as we said yesterday, that this is the kind of thing that a person wouldn't hire somebody to do. There's a category of doing a favor, and there's a category. Well, I mean, lending your services is a favor. See, but there it's services. So I would say that you would think that there's an objective entity over here, that there is a unit of, let's say, schiros. Let's put it that way. Although it doesn't have to be in the framework of schiros, it could be. But something which you would hire somebody for. So either you hired him, it's Bala Vimo, or even if you didn't hire him, as long as he's committed to doing it, there's a commitment. There's got to be an element of a commitment. Otherwise, so what do you mean he's lent out to me? So if that's the case, then I don't think this would qualify. This wouldn't be a unit of schiras. But it is an activity. It is a form of work, because as we said, that a waiter sometimes will bring water, whatever. So perhaps this is the formulation that is Bala Vimo defined in terms of a unit of schiros, in which case this wouldn't qualify, because that's what I meant by dimension. Now, in order for something to be a unit of schiros, I would venture to say that there are two factors to it, a qualitative and a quantitative. That is, sometimes it has to do with the quantitative. It takes time, the amount of time. The activity could be a simple activity. It doesn't have to be that difficult. But it's something which takes time. You're coming over, you're cleaning up the house, you're sweeping the floor. It's not that difficult an activity, but it takes time. In that context, I would say even if you're just babysitting. If you ask him to come over and babysit for your kids and lend me your animal and babysit for my kids for an hour, then I would say that's Bala Vimo. Although these are good questions to see, a source. I mean, whether that's taken up or it's taken up indirectly. To be a shomer, why not? That's a shomer. A shomer, Pardesa, you know, come over and then watch my field. That's a shomer. That's a job. That's something I'd hire you for. So either I'm paying you to do it or I'm asking you to do it as a favor. So why not? To be a shomer.
clearly would be bar levimo. Even though you're not doing anything. But that's a unit of schiras in terms of time. Or it could be something which doesn't have to take up that much time, but it's something which is skilled, like sell a button for me, something like, you know, something, or today with a computer, whatever the case is. It could be something which could be done very quickly. Let's say the person's a doctor, and you have something in your eye, and you're concerned about it, or a rash. So would that be balavimo? Yeah, in my opinion, that's a professional service. The doctor, it's not measured by time. He'll take a look, he'll say it's nothing, or he'll say it is something. Whatever it is, you would pay money for that. That's a professional opinion. So I don't think it has anything to do with the fact they're necessarily of time or not. As I said, on the other hand, it could be something which takes no skill whatsoever. But a person would hire himself out for this. So there's a unit of schiras. This is something that people pay for. That's what I would say would be the havamina. Now, why is it necessary for Rava to come along and give us a particular case, a particular example? The task is to enumerate everything in the world, every activity in the world. Doesn't work that way. The other side of the coin, I would say perhaps that there's two ways that it could be formulated, obviously. Is Balavimo the phenomenon of this schiras, or she'ela, whatever, but it's easier to see schiras. It's just that it doesn't have to be that he's being paid for it. But the unit, the chafza, there's a chafza of schiras over there. Or no. It's not the schiras. It means that at the time of the she'ela, the owner of the object is related to the borrower through a activity of avoda. That's ba'al avimo. In other words, if you need an objective entity of she'ela, she'ela sabal, okay, which is measured in terms of the activity, so then you wouldn't say this. This is it's not something you're going to hire somebody to do. But if you're talking about a form of malacha or a form of avoda, which connects the person to the borrower, so then that's sufficient, because it is an activity. It is an activity of service to the Baal. It's an activity of service to the Baal. It's a form of shimush, of service, and so forth. Of course, how far does that go? Then we just have to draw the line. I mean, just because I ask you to tell me the time and you tell me the time, that's not even a form of shimush. Okay? But the point beneath that, the concept behind it, is that it is not the phenomenon of being a sholo per se is not determined by the objective entity of schiras. It's rather a relationship that exists, which expresses itself through an activity of shimush. Put it this way: it's not measured in terms of dine mamonis. It's not measured that way. It's a certain connection, ba'al avimo. But ba'al avimo is in terms of some form of malacha. What was lacking yesterday was that we just said two sides, you know, but we didn't say what would be the factor to say this way or that way. Of course, so there are two sides. That's the first step, though, in terms of the method. You have to see what this side is and what that side is. That doesn't mean the job is over at that point. Then, if you can, you seek out a category which would explain one side or the other side. What's the underlying category? We're now going to take up Rabbi Yonason, who says, "Kolomar bioso kli atzmo." That the what Rava was teaching was that when you ask to borrow a cup, I'm sorry, and when you ask to borrow something and can give me a drink, and it works, he meant with that particular kli. So that would seem from this that we can deduce. But if it's two separate things, the object borrowed is not the kli, and he merely says, give me a drink of water, then it wouldn't work. And yesterday we raised the question, what the manashach? I mean, either or. You have to assume that Rav Yonason is going according to the psak we already discussed. There's a machlokas in the Gemara. about whether Bala Vimo is b'mlachto in that particular malacha. Okay, that was Rav Hamnuna. Rav Hamnuna has a different position. He holds that Imo means Imo b'mlachto with that particular malacha, that he's barred him to participate in that malacha, and he must be there from the time of the Sheila until the time of the accident. That's his position. We don't paskin that way. That position, ironically, on a common sense level, made more sense to us, as opposed to this position. But that's whatever. That has nothing to do with it. So I'm assuming that Yonasan, in general, does not hold such a requirement. Otherwise, again, what would be the chiddush here? See, I would say that Rav Hamnuna, the way I understand it, maintains that there's a problem. That when you have, to say Baal of Imo, there's got to be a shame she'ela. There's got to be an objective phenomenon of she'ela. And this is too minimal. There's no she'ela. You don't bar somebody to get you a drink of water. But if that is, you're borrowing the object, so, and that's a utilization of the object, so then the shame she'ela, which emerges from the borrowing of the object, extends to the activity of the owner. Then it has the shame she'ela, you see? Because it's already part of the borrowing. It's got to be, in and of itself, it doesn't create a shame she'ela, because it's too insignificant. But that's what he's saying. With regard to the object, and then he goes on to other objects, and if it's something not fit for drinking, like a shovel, so then you borrow him to bring the shovel to your house. But let's just stick with this case. It's an extension that, since I borrowed it for that purpose, and there's a shame she'ela established on it, so then when he's participating in fulfilling that purpose, so that's part of the she'ela. So then he's included in the she'ela. And the inclusion in the she'ela makes it Baal of Imo. But if he wasn't borrowing that object, he was borrowing something else, and he merely got me a cup of water, that wouldn't suffice. It only works because the shame she'ela applies, you see, because of it's an extension of the general she'ela, that there is a shame she'ela. I am borrowing this object, so this object is a borrowed object, and you're participating in that, in the utilization of the object, so then that's considered Baal of Imo, because you're part of the general she'ela. I've incorporated you into the general she'ela. So you're she'el with the object. That's how it works. The way he understood the chiddush of Rava is that there are certain cases where even a minimalistic phenomenon, like just get me a glass of water, would suffice. But he understood that only, that was his modification, not as a universal. He didn't treat it as a universal. We sought to treat it as a universal. Indeed, you see in the Rambam, he brings it down as universal. Does not bring it down with any particulars. But I'm suggesting that Rav Hamnuna did not see it as a universal. Rather, he saw it as a... I'm sorry, not Rav Hamnuna, Rav Yonason. The idea, the way Rav Yonason learned it, and the way Rav states it, if he's smart, it lends credence, because it means that he's borrowing the object, and there's really no Baal of Imo factor. So how does he borrow it in such a way? That's what he's saying. How do you borrow the object in such a way that it becomes Baal of Imo? So he's giving specific examples, as opposed to the general idea. We said the general idea of Baal of Imo is what's Rebbe coming along and saying, Bikeachu. I mean, either you borrow, we know that. Anyone knows that if you borrow, we assume the person knows that if you borrow and you borrow the Baal, so then you're potter. Here he's saying that that's not the case. You don't have any specific thing in mind to borrow him for, whatever. So how can I borrow the object in such a way that I'll guarantee that I'm potter in the very borrowing? So he shows that there are certain objects that that's the way of Jonas has learned. If you get him to do a certain utilization of the object that you're borrowing, so that connects him to the she'ela and it makes it Baal of Imo. According to Rav Yonason, you would say that there's a universal Baal of Imo. There's objective factors, and that goes by the objective criteria of a unit of Schirus, as we said. And then there's particulars that it doesn't have to be that way, provided that it relates to the object of, so then he's involved in the actual she'el itself. If the baal is involved in the actual process of the she'el itself, so then that's called baal avimo. That's what Rav's point was. Put it another way, it means to say whenever the baal facilitates the she'el, is involved in facilitating it, that's another avenue towards baal avimo. Again, the way I understand Rav Yonasan, and brought down in the Sheet of Mikubetes, he's giving suggestions on things that ordinarily would not be sufficient to render it baal avimo. There's nothing. What did he do? Where's the schiras here? But in conjunction with the object, which is already shaul, that's another avenue of baal avimo. Amar Rava, we're going further now. Mikri Dartki, this is a very interesting exploration of the extent to which the concept of Baal Avimo goes. It's talking about different types of, by way of introduction, different types of employees, whether it's municipal employees or even teachers and so on and so forth, that have a certain relationship either to the individual himself or to not the individual himself but to a group which includes that individual. And that shows you how abstract this can get. The phenomenon of baal avimo can get very, very abstract now. And as we'll see, to the extent that the one that is lending is not really doing anything specific for you at that time. Still in all, it can be considered baal avimo. It's a very abstract principle. That's the area we're going into. So Rava said, Mikri Dardiki, that's teachers. Shitla, that would be, according to Rashi, that's Noteya Kramam Lemechza. That's those who plant. Sharecroppers, would seem. Tavcha is the butcher. V'umana, Rashi learns, is Makiz Dam. Now, the assumption is that these people work for the town. Let's assume for a town. Town has a... we're not talking about our concept of a barber. Our concept of a barber, a private business. You go to your barber, it's a private business, and you pay him. And, of course, if while he's cutting your hair, you borrow an object from him, so that's baal avimo. That's not a chiddush. Umanas makizdam... Sapar Masa. The Sapar Masa is Rashi learns I'm a Sapar Sanchoi Ritasporas. That this is the barber. But he had the barber for the city. But what does that mean, the barber for the city? Does that mean there's only one barber in the city? These are all, let's just use a general term, municipal employees. Then it's not a private business. If it's a private business, then he's not working for me. Then when he is working, well, that we'll see. If he is working for me, so then what's the chiddush?
What do you mean by municipal employee?
A garbage man. Yeah, we're assuming that these people are paid by the town, the municipality.
By the taxes of the citizen.
The taxes of the citizen. However it's worked out, we'll assume it's a tax, whatever it is. They all pay for this. And his job is to take care of whoever needs. That is, when you go there, you don't pay for the service. Because if we're talking about, like, we have a private doctor or a private barber or whatever, that obviously is completely different. He's not talking about that. This wouldn't apply. It wouldn't make sense. What do you mean? A doctor is working if he's not working for me? If I borrow something from him? If I go to the office of a doctor and I'm not a patient and I borrow something from him, it's not Paul Avimo. I'm not sure why you have to mention these particular categories. The teacher, maybe they're just illustrations, or maybe some of them have certain aspects to them, but they all partake of one characteristic, and that is a situation where the individual in question is not, it's not an individual customer, he's part of a group, and the lender is obligated to work on behalf of every member of that group. Like a lifeguard, for example. When he's on duty, I would appear. If you borrow something from the lifeguard, even if you're not on the beach, you're not swimming. So then it's bala v'imo. The Gemara doesn't have to list every illustration.
He says, kulhon be'idan avidatayu kishe'ela bevalam dama. All of them at the time of their work. It's considered like she'ela bevalam. Now, the Gemara does not go into too much detail. It's considered she'ela bevalam at the time. At least we know it's got to be at the time that they're working, when they're on their working hours. But for whom? Working for the particular person who borrowed the object? Is that what we're saying? Or no, working for other people? Now, you would think it would have to be working for other people, because otherwise, well, what's the chiddush? So take a look at Rashi, however. So Rashi says, Kishe'ela b'valam dami, im mishahaya zebim lachto, if while this person was at his work, shal heimena behema vioso shah umesa putter. If he borrowed from him an animal at that time, he's putter. All right, we're taking up the Shita Mekubetzet. Hai shitla, kulu be'idin avidita, she'ela b'valam havu, v'ashol mehen putter, milshalim. V'atam, v'bnei shekol elu, notlin sharon v'bnei ho'ir, ka'achas. That's the point that we've been making, because all of these listed, these workers that were listed, all of them receive their salary from the group, from the municipality, as one. Varehain bimlacha etzel kol b'nei ha'ir. So then they are defined as being in malacha, being hired out, whatever you want to say, etzel to everyone in the city. In other words, you're working for me. Because it's sort of like a partnership. You're working for me, even though you're not doing my particular work right now. What's the difference? I'm paying you. I'm the boss. V'yafilu kishaosin malacha li'echad mehen, and even when they're doing work for one of them, Ki'ilu osin l'kulon. It's like they're working for l'kulon, because we're all paying you. Ki l'kulon hein niskaren, because they're rented out to all of them. So that's a blanket concept of ba'al avimo. In other words, I'm rented out to everybody here. So it doesn't make any difference who I'm particularly working for. I'm working for everybody. Oh, so now anybody who borrows at that time can say ba'al avimo. That's the concept. V'havel hu ki echad min ha'shutfim. Sheshal, and this would be equivalent to a case where Shutfim, Ubishash Eila Nishal Kulon. And at the time of the Sheila, he was lent out to all of the Shutfim. Shu Putter Ladivri Akol. He's Putter according to everyone. Kachpira Shabbeinu Hagadol. Now he quotes the Ritva, Aval Midivri Rashi, Nira de Lochashiv Sheila Bivalam, Eloli Oso, Shaib Mlachto. But from Rashi, it appears that he doesn't consider she'ela b'valam except for the individual that he's actually doing the work for at that time. Shimshal mimeno behema bioso shah putter. That if he borrowed an animal at the bioso shah at that time, putter. Velo nihira, he says that's not clear. Dimkein ma'ikamash melon ravas. If that's the case, what's the chiddush? Vai saper masa hainu kosev hashtaros. Now he's saying that the term sapper over here can be as in the sofer, it could be sap, that's misparayim, that's barber, it could be either one. So he's saying it makes sense to him to say it's kosev shtaros. Avol Rashi pirish loshem tasporos shemasaper anshe here b'tasporos uvikir adin shneim shoven. It doesn't really matter. For example, according from the Rush, kivin shehu sacher lachol b'nei ha'ir, since he's rented out to all the people in the a city, l'mlachazu, for this work, b'chol eis, shem tzrichim lo, whenever they need him, b'chol eis, v'chol shah, havi she'el b'valam, l'chol b'nei ho'ir. So at any time, it's considered a she'el b'valam for all the people of the city. Kivin she'im yitztarach lo, m'chuyiv lasos m'lachto. Since if he would need him, he's obligated to do the m'lacha.
Let's ask another version of the question. Let's say that or a rabbi. It would seem from this that a rabbi, an ordinary rabbi in America, is paid a salary to work for the shul. So work out, whatever the work hours are. So if he lends out something to anybody in the shul, it would seem that the ball of emo and the person would be putta for damages. Let's say, though, that it's a shul that there's a foundation or there's a wealthy guy, whatever it is, that's paying the salary himself. One person is paying the salary. But the job is to work for that town, to work for that shul. But the members of the shul are not the ones that are paying the salary. But your job that you're getting paid for is to serve as them. Is that ball of emo? Since they're not paying? Or no, since they're receiving the service? Is that ball of emo or not? It would seem that it is. Because, as we've seen, ball of emo is not only that you're paying him, it's even if he's doing it as a favor. It's just that he's doing it under the framework of a commitment. So when he has that commitment to all the people, it would seem even if it's, what if he's a volunteer? What if he's a volunteer and he's a doctor and he's come to this town and he's volunteered his services for a year and you're not paying him? It would seem to be the same thing, because it doesn't have to be schiras. It's that it could be shela. So he is now made a contract, so to speak, with all the members of the city. So that's the factor. It doesn't seem to be the fact that these are the people that are paying. It's just the Hechi Timsa, that these are the people that are paying.
We're continuing our discussion of the Machlokas Rishonim with regard to the so-called municipal workers who work for the city, but their obligation is to do the work for any particular individual. So now, for example, the Ritva says that even if they're working for one person, it's like they're working for all. Which is to say that, therefore, whoever would borrow from them, it would be Baal of Emo, even though the person borrowing is not he's not using that person. But Baal of Emo is not determined by that a factor. He's now in the employ of everybody. He's working for everybody, so to speak. Most of the Rishonim learn that way. He says, Ki lechulan hein niskarin, because they are niskar to everyone. Vahavu lehu ki echad min ha-shutfim, sheshal. So this would be akin to, for example, the model would be like two shutfim. We're partners and we hire a worker together. Okay? So he's doing our work. So either one, whoever would borrow from him, it would be considered ball of emo, each shutf. So while this is not identical, he's saying it's like that. But he does mention Aval Midivre Rashi, Anira de Lochashev She'elu Bevalim, Ela Laoso Shehoye Bimlachto. But according to Rashi, it would appear from Rashi that it's not considered She'elu Bevalim except for the person who he's actually working for. She'im Shal Mimeno Behemo Beoso Shehoye Pota. Okay? Yeah, the Rashi is Divre Masal Kishe'elu Bevalim Dami. On Sarak Zayin Amar Aleph. He says, Im Shehoye Zeh Bimlachto. Sha'al Heimena Behema. If, when this person was Bimlachto, Malachto, who is the toe referring to? The worker or the borrower? Meaning, Malachto, actually there's room, I think, to say that Rashi isn't disagreeing, but everybody takes Rashi to mean, Im Shehoyezeh Bimlachto, when this person, meaning the worker, was bimlachto in his work or the work of the borrower? Shal heimena behema biososha umesa pata. The key has to do with how do you translate bimlachto? Who? Whose work? The borrower or the worker? Ritva says, Av midivei Rashi zal nira delo chashiv she'ele bivalim el laoso shehoye bimlachto. According to Rashi, it appears that it's not considered she'ele bivalim except for the specific individual that he's working for. She'im shal mimenu behema bi'osa shah pater. That if he borrowed him at that time, it's pater. Now, the footnote cites Divrei Maskil Kishe'ela, cites our Rashi. What Rashi does seem to be saying, though, which is also a separate issue, disagreement with the Raivad. As we'll see, the question is would it be considered she'el bevalim during working hours, even if the person is not actually working then? Or only if he's actually working? There Rashi seems to be saying, when he was b'mlachta, when he was working. Yeah. Rambam's formulation seems to be more explicit, that this exemption applies to the one who, for whom he's doing the actual work. Because the Rambam, in Sheila Pikadon, Perek Beis, Lach Gimel, Malame Tinokos, etc., Biyom Shehu Yoshev Bo, that's just one of the examples. On the day that he's sitting, Lasok Bimlachto, working, Imhishil Ohiskir, Li Echad Me Elu, Shehu Osek Bimlachton. That seems to be explicit. If he borrowed or rented to one of these, that he's actually doing their work. Ah, so that's more explicit. You take a look at the Sheet of Mekubetzes. He brings down a lot of Rishonim on this. He quotes the Ramach, who says, Miloshon Rashi, Umidivei Rambam, Nira, Dolom Miftari Hani, Bahai Tama, Elahanu, Bilchud, Deka Asek Ho'idna, Biavidatayu, Bisha She'ela, Shashar Lomimenu. He's saying that that the from Rashi and the Rambam, it's clear that the Tam of Balavimo only applies to those, Hanu Bilchud, for these individuals, b'chud, the ka'asa ka'idna, that they're actually working for right now, but a blanket thing that anybody in the city can go over and borrow from the barber, even though he's not working for you. Daddy says no. Then he quotes the Rambam, kol echad me'elu chayotzben, etc. Ad chayev she'enem she'ulim lo. Ad kan divrei harambam. Nirim etvarav. Kivan she'ein meleches kulan nasis b'shituf kiachas le'inyan she'ela u'schiris bevalim nami lav kashut from ninu. That is to say, his explanation is, according to the Rambam, that they're individuals. It's not like if a group of us hire someone to work for the group, for the company. And the work that he's doing is company work. So, of course, though, it all breaks down. He's doing my work, he's doing your work. We're all shutfim in the work that he's doing. So that's different than saying that a barber who's works for the city, whoever needs a haircut, comes. But he's not, when you're getting a haircut, I'm not getting. How are you working for me? What benefit am I getting out of that? That's the way he's explaining the Rambam. Miyu kivan di'itzrich rava li'ashmi'inan. However, since Rava needed to teach the Chalhani, the Amrinan, that pertaining to all of those that we mentioned, Imshalu b'nei Masa Minayu, if the people of the town or the city borrowed from them, She'ela b'volumhi, Upaturim, Nira Lomar, the Kivan, the Mitgar Lahu, Kule Shata, that since he's rented out to them for the entire time, Kamanda Ka'ovet Avidatayu, Bahadi Hadadi Damu. It's like someone who's doing their work together with them. The Hakula Shata Mishtabed Lahu, because the entire time he is Meshuba to them. Vachal Shata the Katarid Biavidita the Chad Minayu. And at any time that he's involved in the work of any one of them, Mishtarsha Hahishata Lechavre. Dilahevile Shahusa Lemitrach Bavidite Basarhachi. We're gonna put this aside for we'll come back to this piece in the Ramach. Figure out what he's saying. Mikri Dardiki Pirish Viafiluhachi Notlinschar Minatsibur Bichlal. Nevertheless they receive their wages from the community. Imkalze Bishas Malachtan Hain Kiniskarin Onishalon Leoson Shehem Misaskin Azbim Lachtan Velo Lacherim. Again, that's like the Rambam's position. Nevertheless, Im Kolzeh, in spite of the fact that they're getting their wages from the Tzibur, At the time they're working, they're considered to be niskarin or nishalin laosan shehemis askin oz b'mlachban v'lo lacherim v'lo l'shem echad me'atzibur bi'ot she'eno osek, and not for any one of the tzibur when he's not working for him. Afal pi shehu mechuyev b'chaleis she'yavoh elav l'lmod l'lis asek, even though he has the obligation that whenever a person comes to him, he'd have to work for him, right? Still in all, it's not sufficient. That the fact that theoretically you're hired to do the work of everybody in the town, and whoever would come to you, you have to do the work, that is insufficient if you're not working for me at that moment to render it into She'ela Bevalim. It only works, this principle only works for those who he is actually working for. That's the position of Rashi and the Rambam. I'm going to quote from the Nemukah Yosef now. It's on page 110 in the Nemukah Yosef. Skimu ha'achronim zal, l'pirish ha'raivad zal. See, opposed to this, opposed to Rashi and the Rambam, who says, the lav dafka b'shor she'osim. Now, first of all, be'idan avidatayu. What does that mean at the time of their work? What does that mean at the time of their work? Does that mean literally while they are working, or no? Just working the time that's designated, because these are the kind of workers, if there's nothing, you know, they have to check in every day, but if there's nobody that needs them, no one needs a haircut that day, so they're not actually working, but it is the time of their work. The lav dafka b'shor she'osin, ela b'shor hamyuchados l'mlacha kamar. So the Raivad says that this is talking about the times that are designated for work. Shekiven shalakach heim omdim, because that's, since they're designated for that, that's what they're there for. Kemoshin afarish b'samach, as we will explain, ba'olav imo karina bay. So that's ba'olav imo. Kiriyamina b'reish pirka. Ubalam b'amira. Okay, next. Kishe'ela b'valam damu. This is considered like she'ela b'valam damu. Imshalu kli'li echad b'mnei ha'ir b'shos elu. If he lent a kli to one of the people of the city in these hours, v'ne'ensu, and it was destroyed, p'turim, der pata. V'hadinokit hani. Ah, and the question, so why did he give these illustrations? That was sort of like bugging us a little bit too. Humishum shenotlin schar klali. It's because they work for a general wage, b'bnei ho'ir. Ulaficha kishahu mis'asek im kol echad v'echad. And therefore, whenever he's doing work for the one, meleches kulon hu oseh. He's doing the work of all. So, when he's ever, he's doing my work too. He's doing your work. It's not specific to this individual. V'yashme'inon debahani. And he's teaching me that in these cases, with these people, imshal biosa sholi, the achar, if he lent to another person, she'eino osek bimlachto, that he's not doing specifically his work, ki'ilu hoya osek bimlachto, chashiv. It is as though he is osek in his malacha, v'hav yeshele b'valam, and in shele b'valam. I'm just going to read from the Rush, kuf memala from the pages of the Rush, uve'idon avidatayu pirish arayvadzal, Bisban haroi l'mlacha kamar. That's an important point. That we're talking about the time that's set aside for work, working hours. Okay? The afal pi she'ein osek ba, even though he's not doing anything. That seems like a person reports to the job, and sometimes it's not. There's nothing to do, but he's on the job. L'fi she'ein rashoi lishamet min amlacha hu. Because he can't refuse to do it. He's got to do it. It's the obligation that does it. Ratzalama, kivan shehu sachar l'chol b'nei ho'ir l'mlacha, since he's hired for all the b'nei ho'ir for the melacha, zu, for this work, b'chol eis shehem tzarichalo, whenever they need him, b'chol eis v'chol shah hav yesheh levolam, l'chol b'nei ho'ir. So therefore, at all times when he would have to work. So they don't mean at night, or even, as we'll see, even in a lunch break. They mean at all the hours that are designated for work, he is now considered to be sachur, etzel, kol b'nei ho'ir. Kivon she'im yitztarech lo, because if they would need him, mechuyev lasos malachto. He's obligated to do the malach. Mi d'havi ashutfim, she'sachro sachir chodesh. It would be like two partners who hired a schir chodesh, for a year, a month, or a year. The b'chol shah have sheil b'vol meshutfim. So we have a machlokas with regard to these so-called municipal workers. The position of the Raivad, who learns that that's what the Gemara means. Be'idan avidatayu, at the time that they're doing the malacha, means, see, there's 2 points over here. The time they're doing the malacha means the times in which they're obligated to do the malacha. Their working hours, as we would call it. And whether they're doing work for somebody at that time or not, doesn't matter. And certainly it doesn't matter whether the one who borrows, they're doing his work at that time or not. Since they're mechuyev to do his work, that's considered she'el b'vol. And thus, this is a very, very big leniency, I guess. Okay, the Ritva, in the critical edition of the Ritva. So he brings down Rashi and so forth. And then the other position, the position of the Rabbi. Then he says, Avam Medivei Rashi Zal Nira Delo Choshev She'el B'Valim Eloso Shahib Mlachto. Okay. Shemshal Mehema B'Yosha Patev Elo Nihira, he says. The Imkain My Kamash Melon Rava. And this is the question that they all launch against the position of Rashi and the Rambam. So if he's doing actual malacha for you, so what's the chiddush? Well, what's the chiddush of Rava? You're going to have to explain that. How did the Rambam learn the sugya? At the end of the day, if I go there for a haircut or the bloodletting, and he's working for me, and I borrow an object for him. Okay? So then you have to borrow before, or at least at the same time. But then that's the simple case. So what's the chiddush? Well, why would I think not? Why wouldn't it be balyum? In other words, what he's saying is like this, that there's a chiddush. If you tell me that this is a new phenomenon of Baal Avimo, that even though he's not doing my work directly, but since we're all part of a conglomerate at the time, and therefore we're saying that it's a joint phenomenon, he's doing our work, so then the fact that if I needed him, he's on call for me as well. The fact that he's on call for me as well makes it Baal Avimo. And so that's She'el B'Valim. That's a chiddush. But if you say that he's actually doing your work, so then what's the chiddush? That's what bothers everybody about this position. We're starting to try and analyze what's going on over here, what the chiddush is. Because everything revolves around what is the chiddush of Rava. And the way the Raivad is learning it. The way the Raivad seems to be learning it is that we could see what the Havamina would be. That our understanding of Ba'al Avimo, see, it's a very sophisticated concept. Basically, it's the ordinary case is if I'm borrowing an object from you, and I'm also borrowing you. So there's a direct transaction. There's a transaction which takes place between the owner and the borrower as an individual. So that's Baal Avimo. Is the patur of Baal Avimo, is that because of the fact that that there's an economic relationship? Is it, it's an economic phenomenon that he has to do work for me? Or no, there is a transaction of schiris between him and me. So it's that very transaction is what creates the patur, the poter. This is a poter. Here it's a completely different idea. There's no transaction between me as an individual. It's first of all, the transaction is with the this abstraction. There's a conglomerate, a city, whatever you want to call it, and the city hires him. So he's not the relationship itself is not between him and you. You partake of it accidentally. You partake of the benefits of the transaction accidentally. Now, if we're going to say that the essence of Baal Avimo resides in the fact that he made an agreement with me, that's what it is, which makes a lot of sense on a ordinary hashkafic. We're saying, because we're saying that basically that since he made this agreement with you, so you have greater leniencies, so to speak, of Baal Avimo. But here there was no there's no relationship. There was no transaction with you as an individual. It's just that you happen to benefit from it accidentally. So that's a bit kiddish. And the maskana is it doesn't reside in a transaction. It resides in the fact that you benefit. That is, that the benefit that's procured as a result of the transaction, and that is to say the services of the lender are for you. That's the essence. It doesn't matter how it came about. That's step one. Step two is that once you say that if you partake of a situation where the benefits of Ba'olavimo are accessible to you, so during that entire time, if you lend it from him, it's Ba'olavimo. It doesn't have to be doing work for you right now. And either he's not doing work at all, he doesn't have to be doing work, or he's doing work for somebody else. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because it's the situation. Ba'olavimo is a situation where you have access to the benefits of the work of the lender. So that's Ba'olavimo. That's the way the rabbi learned. In the Hava Amina, the transaction of the Baal, the transaction of the services of the Baal, was made between the Baal and the Gavra of the Shoel. But here, the transaction itself is not particularly with the Gavra of the Shoel. It's with a corporation. So it just so happens that you benefit from that. But that's the maskana, that's the chiddush. That it doesn't matter that it's that relationship, that you have that, not the relationship, it's the economic benefit of the services. That if you have the benefit of the services, so during that time he's beholden to you to do your work, so that's the phenomenon of Ba'olavimo. It doesn't matter how it came about. All right, so we're taking up the critical edition of the Ritva, the footnotes. The Ritva brings down the position of Rashi, that the Mikri Dardiki, etc., all of these employees. So the pshat of the Raivad is that anyone who belongs to that entity, like a corporation. This would be the issue of someone who's hired by a corporation, and not particularly for any individual, but the individuals in question have rights to the services. Is that considered Ba'olavimo? So that's the pshat. So that's Be'id Nevi D'Tayu. That's the pshat of the Raivad, that during their working hours, even if they're servicing one person, every person is considered to be Ba'olavimo if they were to borrow from that person. Except Rashi differed and the Rambam differed, as we saw, and they learned that for these workers, it's only considered Ba'olavimo for the particular individuals that they are working for at that time. It doesn't carry over to the others. So that's the basic machlokas. Now, there's a big question on the Rambam. Okay? The big question on the Rambam is, and the Rashi, is that if you're going to learn that Be'id Nevi D'Tayu is a reference to the particular individual, and that if he's working for a particular individual and that individual borrows something from him at that time, that's considered to be Ba'olavimo, so then what's the Chiddush? That's Pashut. That's the problem. So, of course, we're going to try and address that problem. Here you have footnote number 146 in the critical edition. So he takes this up. He tries to give an answer. So he says, Kein hikshe b'chidush yaran, v'shita mekubetzes, b'shem shita, in the name of, called shita, v'ramach. Then he says, v'ula yesh liyashev. So now he's going to try and answer. Perhaps one can answer. The Kamash Malan Rava, that Rava was teaching us the mikre dardiki, etc., that all these workers, chashiv kishayla bevalim, are considered to be shayla bevalim, lo rak bezman shehu osek bemlachto, not just when he's osek in the malacha, el afilu biyom shehu amur lasok bemlachto, but even on the day that he is set to be osek in the malacha. Kivan shehusha l'chol b'nei ha'ir, because since he's lent, you know, hired, so to speak, or lent out to all the people of the city, harei b'chol yom chashiv she'ela b'valam. So then on every day it's considered to be she'ela b'valam. Gam im adayin lo hischil lasok b'malachto. Even if he has not as yet begun the work, to actually do the work for the person. V'zech yidusho shel Rava. And that is the Chiddush of Rava. He's trying to suggest as follows, that Rashi requires that he be working for that particular individual, and only that individual has the right of Balavimo, protection of Balavimo. But that's, but, so what's the Chiddush? We've learned that, we know that already. So he'll say, no, that the Chiddush is that it's not bedafka when he's actually working for that individual, but on that day that has been set aside to work for that individual, even though he hasn't begun to work yet. Now, we don't know. I mean, Rashi didn't go that far. Rashi just gave you the situation, the circumstances. But perhaps, he's saying perhaps that's what Rashi means. You have to figure out the rest. Yeah, Rashi didn't spell it out that way, but Rashi leaves himself open to a challenge, and maybe that's beaten every to tell you. Maybe that's the way Rashi understood. You have to use your imagination. So you're going to ask, what's the Chiddush? So he's going to tell you that this is the Chiddush. It's difficult for me to see that would be the Chiddush. Why would that be a Chiddush? Why would you need such a case like this? Why couldn't the Gemara just address that in a simple case that we've been using all along, where he borrows an object and the other person agrees to be, or he hires him for the day? So then as soon as the day starts, it doesn't have to be actually working. I mean, we've already, you don't need this case for that. That's a separate question. That is to say that if I borrow an object from you and I ask you to help me with the work and you agree, okay, so now you're set. You're going to be helping me on that day. So do we say that it's balavima only when you're actually physically working? Or no, it's you're lent out to me. So since from the time that you're lent out to me, that is, I don't think it means that he's only during the actual moments that he's working. No, it's balavima because of the arrangement. But that's what he wants to suggest. He wants to suggest that there's a chiddush over here, and the chiddush resides in be'idin and avidatayu. Okay. Anyways, the author, the work, is suggesting that perhaps that's the idea of be'idin avidatayu. And you indeed, that's the way the Ravad learns. The Ravad does learn that there's a chiddush of be'idin avidatayu. Meaning, be'idin avidatayu doesn't mean when they're actually working. It means the time that's designated, the work hours. So perhaps he's saying like this. And now what he's really trying to do is to take that concept and apply it to Rashi. That Rashi would differ and say it doesn't work for anybody. Balavimo is only for that particular individual. So but you'll ask, what's the Chiddush? So the Chiddush would be that it's for that individual, but not Dafkin when he's actually working for that individual, but on the day, on that day. It's sort of taking the position of the Raivad and transplanting it onto Rashi. You have to read his words, the Kivan Shehu Sha'al L'chol B'nei Ho'ir, meaning that since he's Sha'al L'chol B'nei Ho'ir, okay, that is, he has a regular job. It's not just you, it's a regular job. Okay? So that part will work for the individual who he's going to be working for that day. Okay? See, you sort of have two things. You have the individual, only the individual who's going to be working for that day. But since he's Sha'al L'chol B'nei Ho'ir, since he has a regular job, okay? So then from the time, the set hours, from the time that he's supposed to do his work, that's when it'll be considered bolivimo. It's a good point that, well, first of all, that would be a problem. Because if you're going to say that it's only for the individual who he's doing malacha for, so then why should it go back to the beginning of that day? To the contrary, since he's shol l'chol b'nei ho'ir, so then until the time that he's actually working for you, where's the bol avimo? I mean, manoshach, either you hold, this is a good critique, either you hold, like the Raivad, that it's enough that I partake of that group, that he's hired out by the group, and I partake of the group, and that's sufficient to render it bol avimo legabi me, okay? So if you hold that way, so then from the time that he starts working, he shol to everybody, shol to me too. But if you don't hold from that, and you hold it's got to be specific to you, it's only when you're deriving the benefit, so then it should only be from that time. Why should it be from the beginning of the day? It's a good objection that's being raised, that if you do hold like Rashi, and you say it's not enough that I'm part of this group that gets the benefits, it's only when I'm actually receiving the benefit, then it has to be you can't push the time back too much. It's got to be the time when he's osek in your malacha. So even though he may not physically be doing it, he's preparing or whatever the case, that's fine. But it's got to be when he's osek in your malacha, not when he's osek in somebody else's malacha. That's a very good refutation. So we're challenging, that's what he said though, but this is what he wanted to say, that kivan shu shal l'chol b'nei o'ir, I mean, that doesn't seem to follow in terms of logic. Harei b'chol yom choshev she'ele b'valam gam ma'dayim lo hischil l'asok m'lachto. But then he quotes the Ran and the Rush. B'shem ha-Raivad. Yeah, that is indeed the position of the Raivad. Ube'idna v'detayu pirish ha-Raivad zal b'zman ha-roi l'mlacha kamar. That means the time which is fit, which is designated for malacha. V'yaf al-pi she'ein osek ba, even though he's not osek. L'fi she'ein rashoi li shamait min ha-malacha hi, because he can't, he can't be freed from that. He's obligated to do it. And he quotes the Rambam. Okay, b'yomshu yoshev lasak malachto imhishelo hiskir. Okay, then he says v'ayin v'mishlo melech sham shekosev demediyuk lashono. He wrote that from the implications of his language mashma to b'yom shu omer lasak malachto mikri shmir b'balam, that from the day that he is committed. He stated or committed to work in his malacha, is considered to be shmir b'valam. Afal pish adayin lo nisasek b'malachtom, even though he hasn't yet begun. Ela shehevi b'shem arivash, the siman teflam edvav, the davke b'sheosek mamash b'malachtom, have a shmir b'valam. Then he brings a different source which says the contrary, that it's only davke when he's actually. Umnam b'chidush yaran v'rasham heviyu das arayvad v'afal pikin. Now, nevertheless, they ask the question, "My kamash malan rava." The tirates the chashiv kishayle bevalim l'chol b'nei hoyir. Well, you see, this is how he refutes his own suggestion. His own suggestion would be that you can establish a chiddush of rava by saying that for Rashi's purposes. By saying that the Chiddush of Rava is that it's already considered Sheol Bavolim from the day on which he's going to be working for you, even though he hasn't started the work yet. Okay, the way he refutes that is by saying, well, the Raivad has that point as well. The Raivad in his category, the Raivad holds it doesn't matter if he's working for you or working for anybody else. Okay, but he's already said that it's from the beginning of the day. Okay, now. When they asked, what's the chiddush of Rava? V'lo nichelahu l'taritz the kamash malan diafagav da dayan lo hischol b'malacha chashiv kasheil b'valam. They didn't want to. In other words, the answer to the question of my kamash malan Rava was the chashiv kasheil b'valam l'chol b'nei ho'ir. That's the chiddush. Okay. The way the Raivad learns, two points were being made by Rava. One point is that be'idin avidatayu, that it doesn't have to mean when he's actually osek, but the time period that's designated, that's one. The other one was that even though he's not working for me, right? Doesn't matter. As long as when he's working for one person in the city, it's like he's working for all. And all of us can claim Balavimo. That's the Chiddush, they said. See? So they seized upon that as being the Chiddush. But the fact that it's also a Chiddush, that even though he's not doing any work, he's just the time, the hours of work, that apparently wasn't the Chiddush to them. Apparently this was Pashat to them. So what they're saying, that point was not the Chiddush of Rava, because that's obvious. That's obvious. What is the Chiddush of Rava, however, was just this point, that even though he's not doing work for you, he's doing work for the city, but so what? Since you're part of the city, at that time when he's designated to do work for anyone, even not you, it's though he's doing work for you, because you're it's like shitfus. That was the way, that's the way Ravad learned the, see, now, so his point, the way he rejects that suggestion, and he remains with the question, what's the Chiddush according to Rashi? His approach is very, very nice. He was able to deduce that point would not constitute a Chiddush. That point would not constitute a Chiddush. Because you see that Raivad holds that way, that it's considered Balavimo from the time of the designation. You know, it does not from the actual work. But that's not the Chiddush. The Chiddush is that that in itself wouldn't be a Chiddush. The Chiddush is rather that apparently that's a Dov Pashut. The Chiddush, however, is that even though he's not doing work for me, I can still consider it Balavimo because I'm part of the whole group. So therefore, You're still stuck with the question according to Rashi, that my kamashmalan. If you're going to say according to Rashi that Rashi doesn't accept that you can't when he's working for somebody else, you borrow an object and say balavimo because it's you're part of the group. Rashi rejects that, and Rashi says you could just claim balavimo when it's for you. So then he's stuck with the question, my kamashmalan. Okay, now we're going to just take a quick look at the Ran, from which he derived this point. That's on Mikri Darjiki. V'im Tomar, the Ran says, Maika Mashmalon, Pshita, Umayshna Hani Dinakat, Yeshlomar, the Kamashmalon, the Hachi, the Chirishish, Shafilu B'shoshu, who Misasik, B'maleches, Echad Mehen, Chashiv She'elu B'valam, Im Kulu B'nei Masa. That the Chiddush is that even though he's not doing your work, he's not working for you at all, but you it's Balavimo. Because you're part of he's working for the Masa. Lefisha Bali Umnas Halalu, Notlin Schar Klali, because these workers take a general salary, Mibnei Ho'ir, from the people of the city. Lefisha Keshehumas Asaikim Kalech V'yeched, and therefore, when he's working with one particular, Maleches Kulanu. It's the work of the group, of all of them. It's the work of all of them. Ose. V'chatzav ha-raivad, d'chi karmah b'idin ha-viditayu, lav dafka b'shosh osin, el b'shosh ham yuchadas l'mlacha. Then he adds that as a secondary point. So there are two points over here. There are two points to the din of Rava. One point, and this is the major point, is the fact that these people work for the B'nai Masa, they get their wages from the Masa, so that even if he's working for one person, any other person can claim Balavimo, because it's our work that he's doing. He's doing my work. The second point was that B'id Nevidatayu, Lav Dafka, it doesn't mean when they're actually doing the work, Ela B'sharos Ham Yuchados L'mlocha Kamar. So that's point number two, that whenever they are on the job, Shekivan shalakachin omdim, because that's what they're there for. Balavimo, Karina Bey. Okay. But the point is that this latter point, this second point, one could say applies to Rashi as well. You see, that's what the footnote sought to do, to take that second point and use that as the basis. But he proved from the Ran that itself is not the Chiddush. The Ran didn't, why didn't the Ran just say that's the Chiddush? But no, that's just a secondary point. Apparently, that's not a big chiddush. Well, I mean, don't you see? It is a bit of a chiddush. Is it no chiddush at all? If it's no chiddush at all, why did Rav have to make a point of it? That Eden never tell you, what's the hava, I mean, so to speak? I mean, are we saying it's no chiddush at all? It does seem to be a bit of a chiddush the way it's being presented to us, right? So how would we explain it? Point two, we said there's 2 points over here. Are they two separate and distinct points, or are they interconnected? See, it seems that the second point of Be'id Nevid Atayu is connected to the first point. Because what you're basically saying is that a municipal worker is hired out or loaned out to all the people of the municipality. So, if that's the case, it doesn't matter who he's working for. Well, if it doesn't matter who he's working for, that he's working for somebody else, it doesn't matter if he's working at all or not working, it's just that he's homing. He's there. What difference does it make if he's physically doing something? This is the time when he's on the job. He's on the job. At that point, he's sholo. No one's going to say, for example, in a private case where I borrow an object and I have you come along to help, that it's only when you're actually knocking nails into the wall, when you take a break, then you're not emo anymore. It doesn't make sense. It means in the time in which you're sholo. Okay? The time in which you're show. So, the same thing would be over here. Except that here it's a different kind of a thing. In that, interestingly enough, the fact that he's sholo is it's an arrangement. He's sholo because that's his job. So he doesn't have to actually be. What difference does it make if he's actually working or he's not? He's on the job. He has to be there. He's omate. He's ready. So he's a worker. He's defined as a worker. That's it. The second point flows from the first point. Again, what I'm saying is that the Raivad's point that Idun Avidatayu is lav dafka when he's actually manually, physically involved in the work makes perfect sense and flows from the new definition. That is, that the worker per se, if he's a worker for a masa, so then he's a worker for everyone, so then the only thing is, when is he a worker? At that time, when he goes on the job. Since we pay him, he's on the job. He's lent out to every one of us. So that's the idea. Since he's lent out to every one of us, all we need to know is, from what time is he lent out? Oh, so when he goes on the job, he's lent out. What difference does it make if he's banging your nails, for me or for you or anyone at that time? Basically, it's saying it's like this.
Unfortunately,
that is the job. He's fulfilling his job. His job is to be there and respond to any call. So by being there and ready to respond to any call, he's on the job. That's his job. He doesn't have to.
So
it means when he says lo yachol lishamay, I think he can't free himself. It means that he's given up his time. That's his job. His job is to be there. So getting back to the basic machlokas, before we move on, at this point it seems to be that the Raivad holds that the Ba'al Avimo is secured, even if it's not based upon a particular kinyan or relationship between you as an individual and the lender. Even if it's an abstract phenomenon, there's a corporation, there's a city, and he's hired out to the city, and you have a right, indirectly, it's not direct, you have no direct contact, but since you're a member of the city, you have a right to his services, so the right to the services that you have is sufficient to render it into Ba'al Avimo. Whether you're actually exercising that at this moment or not is irrelevant, it doesn't matter. But it has to be the time at which it could be exercised. But the Rambam and Rashi hold that that's not Ba'al Avimo. Ba'al Avimo means there must be a connection in terms of malacha, that he's osek b'malachto. He has to be involved in your malacha. So it doesn't work for anybody. If he's working for somebody else, then that's not considered to be Ba'al Avimo. It's only Ba'al Avimo because he's actually connected to me in terms of the Osek B'Mlachto. The only question is, so what's the Chiddush? So what's the Chiddush according to the Rambam? So that's like, so according to Rashi and the Rambam, you would say that it's not enough that you have the benefit of his services, that you're experiencing the benefit. It has to come about through a particular transaction that he's lending himself out to you. Here he's not lending himself out to you. Kamash malan, that it doesn't matter. That any basis, even though the basis of the yeschaivus, the contractual arrangement is not between him and you, it's a different kind of thing. But it doesn't matter. We don't care about that. We only care about the result. The result. If the result of osek b'mlachto is there, and it's there, it's secured through an obligating factor on the one who's doing on the masho, that's sufficient. Even though the cause is not any particular relationship to you as an individual, he's not lending anything out to you as an individual, but he's lent out to you. But he is lent out to you only indirectly, but not because of you. So then when he's osek b'mlachto and he's osek b'mlachto in a form where he's sho'olo, so then it's sufficient. For the Rambam and Rashi, he has to be deriving the actual benefit. It's got to be working for me. If he's working for somebody else, then it doesn't. There's no ball of emo. But that's the chiddush, though. That the reason why he's working for me is not because of any arrangement with me. But that's sufficient, because the arrangement that he has, if it produces a result in which he's obligated to work for me, that's sufficient. Just before we go further, a little bit of a summarization, as we've been viewing the two different positions with regard to the city workers, that the Rambam maintains that the relationship to the city is not sufficient to render it ba'al of emo for every particular individual. It's a different kind of a concept. It's true that the individual derives a benefit from that and has a certain right, but that right, that's the root of the machlokus, whether that right per se, that schus that you enjoy in the labor of the worker, but not as an individual, not as a result of an individual contract, but simply because you're part of the city. So that's the question. The Rambam holds that's insufficient to render it ball of emo. It's got to be a particular arrangement with the individual. So once you agree to work for me, so that agreement is sufficient, even if you're not actually working right now. During the time that you've agreed, whether you were paid to do so or whether you just agreed, it's nishalo. It does not have to be with payment. It's the commitment. It's the commitment of the individual to do the work for me. That's nishalo. Of course, if he's rented, then of course that's considered ball of email. Amar, we're going further now. Amar Rava. I'm sorry. A few lines down. After Rava introduced this concept of Mikra Dardiki and the other workers. Amru le Rabbanan le Rava. So the Rabbanan, it would mean the Talmidim in this case, said to Rava, Sho'el lan mar, that the master is loaned out to us. That is to say that you're doing our service, you're teaching us, you're the Rebbe, so we're benefiting from you, and therefore it's whether he's getting, well, we'll soon see whether he's getting paid or not. But the nature of this relationship is such that you're loaned out to us. Meaning to say, therefore, that if we were to borrow something from you at that time, then it would be Sheila Bevolim. That was their position. However, Rava didn't like it too much. Akpid. So he took umbrage, so to speak. He was makpid. It's more than just disagreeing. He just certainly didn't like the idea. Amar Lahus, he said to them, Lafkui Mimonoi Kabitu, do you want to take my money away? No, that's just an expression. I don't think it was serious, like angry, but it was sort of an expression. Is that the idea? That you can borrow things from me, and then if it breaks, you're not obligated to pay me because of Bolavimo? First of all, you see that there's a machlokus over here. In terms of the Rebbe-Talmud relationship, who's loaned out to who? Not only did he disagree with them, but he turned the tables on them. And he said that it's quite the opposite. Adarava, Iton Shilton Li, you're loaned out to me. De'ilu ana matzi ishtamuti lechu mimsachta l'mesachta. Because I can switch you from one mesachta to another. That seems to be a governing factor over here. Who has the rights to determine what we're going to be learning? Is you're at my disposal. Now, what does that mean, however, that he can change the subject matter? At first glance, that doesn't seem to be a sufficient reason. Why would the fact that he can determine the subject matter be sufficient reason to say that he's there at his disposal? Why is that? Take a look at Rashi. Let's take a look at Rashi, Sha'olon Mar. Well, the Rabbanan Abanei Beis Medrasho. They were the ones who studied it in his Beis Medrash. Rabbeinu Nishalanu L'mlachtenu. You're loaned out to us for our work. L'lmod Lanu Torah. That's our work. We have to study Torah. So you're the teacher. You're teaching us. So you are at our disposal. Shayoshiva Malamid Lanu Torah Kalayom. He sits and teaches us Torah Kalayom. I don't know why he has to say Kalayom. I don't know why that should matter. What if it's, why is Rashi saying Kalayom? What if it's a Daf Yomi Shir? About an hour, say. I'm not sure if Kalayom means every day, or whether it means the entire day. In either case, though, what difference does it make, though? Either way, if we take Rashi to mean the entire day, Kol Hayom, simply speaking, is Kalayom. Okay? It can all mean the entire day. It can also mean kalayom every day. It can. But, I mean, either way, how is it going to... Why is it necessary to say it? Let's assume, according to the Havamah, okay? Well, we'll soon see it could be both ways. Because if it's a Yom of the Kala, days of the Kala, when you learn a specific area, so then the situation reverses. Okay. But let's assume, according to the Havamah, when they said, you know, you're loaned out to us. What did they mean then? That if they borrow, if we borrow from you, it's Baal of Imo and we're exempt. But is that only at the time of the learning or any time? Or any time of the day? It would seem that a teacher who teaches the students and the students pay the teacher, that's Baal of Imo. No one's questioning that. But it wouldn't be when he's not working. It would only be when at the time of the when he's working, during the working hours. He says, "V'im nishalmi men a behema u'meisa nifter." And if we borrowed a behema and it died, we're pata. So when did they borrow the behema? That's the question. We're gonna put this question on hold for the time being because it's a very interesting question. Now that we have the issue of be'id navidatayu. That we've already discussed in the previous case, that the municipal workers, etc., and Dardiki, Mikra Dardiki was one of them. That's from the time that's set. So we have to assume, for our purposes, that, I don't know why Rashi said Kalayom, but we have to assume that this is a further development, and the principle of Eden Avidatayu, from the time that's set. Maybe Rashi said Kalayom is the time. It's there's no set time, but all day long. That is, the Beis Medrash is open all day long, and he's committed to being there all day long to make it easier, and that's included in the time. But we'll see. First issue we have to address, though, is a case where it appears that, it's a machlokus as to who's emo in this situation. Who's working for who here? So, they said, Rabbeinu Nishalon al-Machtenu. Okay? Now, the Mefarshim point out that this is not a paid the job. If it was a paid job, it seems that it would be pashut, that he's hired. And even though in terms of Bala Vimo, it doesn't matter. I want to even Bala Vimo could be I'm getting paid or voluntary. It doesn't make any difference. That's what's, you know, that's what's interesting about it is that if I agree, and even though I'm not getting paid, I'm Bala, it's Bala Vimo. I'm doing it voluntarily. Now, the next one, Iton She'ilton Li, Rashi, Limlachti, from my Malacha, Shekshani Chafetz Lahaschul B'Masechet Acheres, when I want to do another Masechta, Shalot Tishkach Mimeni, so that it should, I shouldn't forget it, Ein Atem Yechol Limchos B'Yodi, you can't protest. Now, why did Rashi mention that factor that, he could have simply said that I have the right to change Masechtos. But he added that I want to change Masechtos because I want to review. You can't stop me. What difference does it make of why I want to change Masechtos? Why did Rashi have to give you the reason why he wants to change the Masechta? Let's say he has the right. Let's ask this question. Suppose the Rebbe is teaching. I agree to teach you guys. Okay? And I determine the curriculum. Like you'll say, like, who's going to determine what areas to learn? So we can discuss it, but then they say, you determine. Okay? The fact that I can change the area, I decide that we're going to switch to a different area now, that the right to determine the subject matter, that doesn't mean that necessarily that they're working for him. Because he's working for them. But he's changing in accordance with their needs. So if he's changing in accordance with their needs, and very often, whether it's the teacher or whatever it is, the principal might give the teacher the right to choose the curriculum. So you can change, and the students can't stop you from changing. But they say, no, we'd rather study this. And they'll say, no, this is better for you. It's the reason behind the change. If the change is being made for the benefit of the students, so then the fact that the teacher can make the change in and of itself wouldn't mean anything. That's what Rashi's saying. But the reason for the change is for my benefit. So I want to study that Masechta because I don't want to forget it. And you don't want to study that Masechta. And I'm not arguing that it's better for you. I'm saying it's better for me. So that's what he's saying. So that's the case, you're really here to help me. You're lent out to me. But why would they be lent out to him, though? I mean, I can understand who you have teacher, you have student. Most people would think a teacher, even if he's teaching voluntarily, is doing a service on behalf of the student. So that, still in all, I'm teaching you. And if I have the right to pick the topic, and I can pick it because I like that topic or whatever, still in all, I'm teaching you. Why wouldn't... see, Rav is saying two things. Rav is saying, first of all, that I'm not lent out to you. That's point A. Point B, he's saying, is you're lent out to me. It's one thing to say, no one's lent out... Can we envision a situation where no one is lent out to anyone? Just raising a question, Saddam. Let's say I say, come over and play chess, and let me borrow your cup. Something like that. Is coming over to play chess with me, would that be... I could say, come over and learn with me. This brings us back to something very basic about the whole concept of She'ela B'Volam. Okay? The Rambam in Perek Sheni, Halach Aleph, of Pikadon, She'ela Pikadon, Hashoel es habalam o she sachran. V'yecher hashoel es habalam li osa hamalacha. Whether he was showing them for that particular malacha, which particular malacha, the one that he borrowed the object for, because that was the machlokas. O she sholon v'sachran the malacha cheres. Or he borrowed them or rent them for a different. O l'shum dava ba'olam. L'shum dava ba'olam means for anything. What is l'shum dava ba'olam? Is there a requirement of malacha? What is l'shum dava? How? Where do you draw the line? Let's say I want to go somewhere, and I go along with me. A traveling companion. For example, let's say somebody accompanies you to a trip to Israel, whatever the case is. He says, L'shum dava ba'olam. Is that considered to be ba'olam imo? You're borrowing something and the person is going to accompany you. I would say that that's definitely, as long as you're doing something for him, I'm doing it because of you. I don't want to go to Israel. I'm doing it to accompany you, whether I'm getting paid or not getting paid. So, obviously, there's some stipulations over here that you're agreeing that you're going to go with me. That is, if I go there and then you go off by yourself and leave me alone, then you're not doing it. Then you're bound to do certain things. Okay? You're bound to go on trips, whatever. Whether you decide what the tours are, whether I decide, I don't think is the issue. But you're agreeing to do something for my sake. So that could be like a job. Anything could be a job. People have tour guides. They have traveling companions just to be with me because I don't want to be alone. So you're providing a service for me. I would say it must have the quality that the person is loaned out to you, that I'm doing something for you. But if I'm coming over for mutual, just friendship, who's long? I'm not, it's nothing. I mean, we're both having fun. I'm not bound to do anything for you. You see what I'm saying? So, if for example, to play chess or to play any game, okay, cards, whatever it is, if I'm doing it for you because you derive the benefit, I'm a better player, and you want to improve your game, so you want to play against me. So in all of those situations, I'm doing something for you. But it would seem to me if it's just like we said before, like pass the tissue, it's mutual, it's friends, it's friendship, it's no one's doing anything for it, then you're not lent out. That's not lent out. Just because you happen to be enjoying something together, that's not lent out. Lent out implies that it has a certain form of schiras. Even though I'm not paying for it, though, you see? So now, in the situation of, the learning over here, what he was tining was, that's the question, you know, each one is getting a benefit. Each one's getting a benefit. The students obviously are learning, I'm teaching the students. But now, it's ironic, that's something you could see, you know that I learned a lot from my rebbes, and I learned even more from my chavrusas. So when the rebbe is teaching, it could be teaching for two reasons. Of course, theoretically, there's always some benefit, but very often it's just teaching. It's I'm teaching, they're getting the, I'm working for them. As far as my own Torah, well, theoretically I might gain, but I'm not doing it for my own. But if the situation is one where it's for my benefit and you're there for me, you're at my disposal because I need students. And to increase my knowledge, to increase my insight, apparently, you see, it's interesting. It's interesting. Let's go one step further over here. Let's go one step further. He was saying that this factor of the ability to change masechtos is definitive, is determinative. Why don't we just say that I'm teaching you guys for my benefit? That's not enough. I'll tell you why. Because take a look at the Gemara a little bit further. He says, I can change from Masechta to Masechta. And you can't. Velohi, the Gemara says. That is partially, it's a partial. It's not absolute. It appears that there's another half meaning in Maskana over here. Velohi. Ihu. Shaluhu biyom with the kala. He's lent out to them on days of kala. Inu she'ilu lei b'shar yomi. So it's sort of like a compromise. What's the days of kala? It's called yarchei kala. Biyom with the kala kishedorshin lifnei haregel b'hilchos haregel. The lomotzi lishtamute l'milsachriti. On the days of the usually 30 days before the regel, they begin to study the laws of the regel. So then a new system comes into effect. Then the Rebbe can't change. He can't say, I want to learn something else now. So in that time, it's going to be that he's lent out to them. So what's going on over here? What's the machlokas? What's the machlokas between the two positions? And what's the havmin and maskana pertaining to yarchei kala? Because the chora, I mean, if the argument is that the students are really the ones who are working for the Rebbe, I mean, first of all, why? I mean, the students are getting a benefit just because it's true that he has the right to change masechta, right? But well, what do you mean? But does that mean that the students are being taught? He's teaching them. And then they're not coming there because they don't want to do it. They're doing him a favor. They're not coming there to learn to do him a favor. They're coming there to learn. So he has the, so it's a question, who gets the right to choose? Masechtos. But if you're going to say that they're loaned out to him because they're basically there to hone the skills or to increase the knowledge of the Rebbe, so then why should the same thing should be Yarchei Kala? Apparently there's a Havmina Maskana pertaining to Yarchei Kala. Because they said Velovi, Yarchei, there's a sort of a compromise. But what's the difference? Yarchei Kala, if you're going to tell me that this arrangement is one for the benefit of the Rebbe, because I want to learn, because I want to increase my skills. So, okay, so Yarchei Kala, I can't change the topic. But the same thing, I'm still there to gain. I'm not there for your sake, I'm there for my sake. Yeah. Now, I'm also throwing out a question. Let's imagine a case where, because we've said until now that this presupposes that they're not paying. If they were paying him, then it would seem clear that he's rented out to them. But let's say they're paying him, and he still has the right to change masechtas, and they can't be mocha, because that was the agreement. He's a great teacher, and in order to get him, they had to agree. Harav she'enam meshubad l'talmidim, we're doing the me'iri. The Rav, who is not meshubad to the talmidim kol kach, who's not beholden to the students so much, she'yehei meshubad lehem l'ma she'yirtzu heim l'lmod. He's not that beholden to them, that he has to give in to them in terms of what they want to learn. Uvachalei she'yirtzu, whenever they want to learn it. Elishahu Makare Kirtsono, but he reads, he teaches Kirtsono. Bisman Shahu Rotza. Interesting. The Zman factor comes in. We saw already in Rashi that Rashi addressed the Zman factor, but he apparently addresses it a little bit differently. He says Kalayom. Now the Gemara didn't mention anything at all about this. The Gemara only mentioned Masechta. He mentions Bisman Shahu Rotza. Uva Masechta Shahu Rotza. The two things that he teaches according to his own what he desires, when he wants, and what he wants. V'heim kvum lova lefanav, and they're set to come before him. V'nega behem lichvodo ulatoeles shmiras talmudo. And they... That is to say, the studying that's going on is for his kavod. I don't know why he mentions kavod. It's interesting to know why he's mentioning it for kavod. But whatever, it's for his toelas. Ulo toelas shmiras talmudo. For the purpose of remembering, he wants that. This is his purpose. In other words, if the Rebbe sets up a shiur, I set up a shiur with a group of guys, which is for my benefit. I want to do certain areas of bakiyas. I want to do certain areas. So you're really there at my behest. I'm doing it for my benefit, and you're helping me out, so to speak. This is not an exact description, though. This is not an exact description. That's not what's being... Why did the Meiri have to mention the factor of time? This is Mancha who wrote it. I don't know why that's a factor. The Gemara didn't mention it. Rashi simply says Kalayom. He says B'chob B'zmanshu Hurotza. It would appear according to the Meir that if they determine the time, then it would be a different situation. So he says, Harehem Sh'ulam Etzlo, their Sh'ulam Etzlo, Velohu Etzlam. And he's not Sh'ol Etzlam. Ho'ol V'yachol La'asikam M'mesechta L'mesechta. But finally, he comes back to that point. Since he can move them from one Mesechta to the other. When we call Makam B'yom HaDrasha, on the day of the Drasha, Shu Dorish Lama and Yoni HaMoados, the days that are dead, because those days are designated. She Efshalo Li Shamet Ulatikam L'davar Acher, he doesn't have the right to switch the topic. Hu sha'ul lahem. V'heim einam sha'ulim lo. So it's interesting. Why is he sha'ul lahem? If again, he's doing it for his purposes, for his, either his honor or to sharpen himself in certain areas. Yeah, it's a good point. We're saying on the day of the Kala, it's not that they dictate the Masechta. It's dictated by the halacha. Halachically speaking, he has to. So what about all the other factors then? Two people learning together, chavrusas, two people learning together, is that considered balavimo, vis-a-vis any one of them? Well, if the activity is mutual, then you have to understand, where am I? I'm not meshubah to you. I'm doing it for my own sake. I'm involved in this for my own sake. It just so happens that the activity that I'm involved in for my own sake happens to accidentally involve you. But that doesn't mean I'm shul to you, and vice versa. Here is a situation where we have to point out that I'm at your disposal. I'm doing something for you. Somebody is doing something for somebody else. In that sense, he becomes shul lo. So that's what the Gemara is working on. What are the criteria? Here you have two people engaged in an activity. You have the students and the Rebbe. And the question is, who shul to who? This proves the point, though. If the Rebbe says that I'm doing this because of my benefit, then I'm doing it for me, then I'm not shul to you. Of course, that's a perfect illustration of the Chavrusa case. The argument of Rava, that to the contrary, you're shul to me, is a perfect illustration of the Chavrusa case, because that's what he's saying. That, of course, I'm teaching you. That's the way it looks. But I'm doing it for myself. I'm engaged in my own malacha. And you are, to the contrary, you're just an accident. Not only that, but you're actually, since you're coming here, and you're coming here to help me in my purposes, then you're shul to me. But let's leave that aside. Certainly the fact that that he's not shul to them, why? Because he's doing it for his own benefit. So if two people are learning b'chavrusa and each one is gaining for it, it's a mutual activity, so then neither one is shul to the other one. Then I'm engaging in this for my purposes, and it happens to involve you. And you're engaging it for your purposes, and it happens to involve me. So I would say that there's no situation of balavima at all. Unless you can prove, you see, if you could prove that one of them has the upper hand, that one of them is really at the disposal of the other one. For example, I'm not really gaining from this, I'm doing it for you. So I'm doing you a favor. So that's malacha. All right, the Rush. That's Daf Kuf Mem Aleph in the pages of the Rush. The Chena Rav Ashonu L'Talmidim. The Rebbe was teaching students. Imtoli Barav. The Lamed L'Talmidim, Ezo Masechta Shu Rotze, if it's up to the Rav, to teach them whatever Masechta he wants. V'yim Eschidlu Masechas Achas, he goes even further, interestingly enough. And if they began with one Masechta, Yachal Rav Lishnoso Mimasechas Zu L'Masechas Acheres, then the Rav can change it. See, apparently, like we said before, the mere fact that you could choose the Masechta in and of itself is not enough. Because I could be choosing the Masechta in accordance with what's the needs of the students. But more than that, that he can change. Once we begin studying, so you don't want to, you're involved in this Masechta, you finally broke through, you don't want to switch to another one. I could just arbitrarily decide to switch to another one. So that's at your expense, so to speak. And you can't do anything about it. You have to get the other Gemara and start over again. Doesn't matter. Az heim sh'ulim lo. So he doesn't mention the time factor. The Miri brought up the time factor. Then they are lent out to him. V'yim shal mehen. And if he borrowed from them, hav yishel b'volim. V'yim ha'davatoli b'talmidim l'shanos. Harav v'yimsechta l'msechta. If it's the other way around, that they can switch masechtos, as a rav shaul lahem, v'yim adavar tali b'shnehem, and if it's up to both of them, she'ein harav yochol lashanos ha-masechta b'lo das ha-talmidim v'lo ha-talmidim b'lo das ha-rav. They each one exercise mutual veto power. So, It can only be done in conjunction with agreement. They all have to agree. Neither one has the power. Einam she'ulim zeh lezeh klal. This is a very good place to ask, well, why would that be? I mean, just because the subject matter is mutually agreed upon, but why? I mean, is it essentially, if the Rav is doing it to improve his skills, etc., and so why aren't they sholo? I mean, what is this? This factor emerges as being the most significant, the determination of Masechta L'Masechta. Now we're going to try and explain the issues from the Gemara. That first of all, the students maintained that that Rava is nishal to them because he teaches them. Rava countered and said that not only is he not, but they are nishal to him because he can switch from masechta to masechta. Okay, and all the mafarshim learn in and of itself that's not enough. That he can switch them. Part and parcel along with that is the entire context is one where he's doing it for his sharpness. He's doing it, he's teaching for his benefit. And if he's teaching for his benefit, so they're there to service him, so to speak. And he needs students. It's sort of like sparring partners, so to speak. Abdul, whatever. I mean, you're there for my benefit. And I call the shots. That's what he's saying. Okay. So then the Gemara says, accepts that, and it says, but one second, but according to that reasoning, but not on Yarchikala, where you can't switch. On Yarchikala, you can't switch. Okay, we have to understand that. So why is it? But still, the basic factor should remain, even on Yarchikala, when he can't switch, but still, I would imagine the whole point of the learning is for his benefit, unless you want to say that since it's only for his benefit when he's picking the Masechta, but if it's the Yarchei Kal, then it's not for his benefit anymore. It's possible to say that, but I'm not sure if that's the case. And if that's the case, we also have to explain, okay, let's assume then that since he can't switch the Masechta, then no longer Nishal Lo. But why does it automatically mean that he suddenly becomes Nishal to them? They can't switch the Masechta either. That's the question that Lou asked yesterday. While it's true that he loses the right to choose the Masechta, but they also don't have the right to choose the Masechta. That's simply because it's being dictated by Halacha. That's the Halacha. So everybody is nichna to the Halacha. So then you would think perhaps it should be even. Neither one of them has that power, so then perhaps neither one should be nishal to the other. But the Gemara says, no, Velohi. That's a bit of a chiddush, I think, the Velohi. Because you might say that, all right, that I understand that since he can't switch Masechtos, I mean, you have to explain why that's the decisive factor. But once he loses the power to switch Masechtos, so then they are no longer Nishal to him. Why does it follow from that, that he's then automatically Nishal to them? You can say it's a standoff, so to speak. It's a standoff. All right, these are the questions that we raised yesterday. A practical answer is being suggested. That in the Yarchei Kala, he can't switch. He has to learn the Inyan Diyoma. But perhaps within the framework of Inyan Diyoma, because that's a big area too, who determines which areas of Inyan Diyoma? Or what to go into? There's a lot to go into. And it could be that that's really what the Gemara means. That he's now at their disposal. Because since, that's a good point. It's a good insight. Because since the whole, what's the whole point behind this? The whole point is really to prepare. That when the Yom Tov comes, it should be prepared. So maybe he's nichna then the whatever questions they have about practical halachos, areas that they need. It would no longer be determined by his desire to pursue a certain area for his sharpness. But rather, the whole idea of Yarchei Kala is to be at the disposal, that to answer Shilas, Sholem V'Darshim. Now, Sholem V'Darshim could be a theoretical. It's interesting. I mean, there's an inyan of learning in Yonah Diyoma on the regal itself. He's supposed to learn on the regalim. He's supposed to learn on Yom Tov. It's the whole idea of Chetzya Lashem and Chetzya Lachem. So that's the time to learn. But I would say there's a difference between the Sheol and Vidorshim, the 30 days before the Regel, you're supposed to be Osek in the halachos of the Regel, and the learning on the Regel itself. What the Sheol and Vidorshim of 30 days before is a recognition of the fact that to really keep the Yom Tov properly, you have to know the halachos. So that's really preparation. Especially when it comes to Pesach, it's more, it would seem to me, it's more complex. But it doesn't matter anyone. But on Yom, so therefore it's more practical. That's the Machayev. The Machayev of Sheol and Vidorshim is really the practical. That a person shouldn't enter into the Chag unprepared. Because then how can he keep it properly? So, but the learning on the Yom Tov itself is not, I mean, there's always a possibility of practicality, but that's not the aim. The aim is really for the sake of the learning. That's the Kedushas Hayom. That the learning is a key in the very Kedushas Hayom of the Chag. Person fulfills the mitzvah of the celebration of the Chag through many things, but learning is a key component. So that's a different kind of a learning. That's a learning to really understand, lahavin, to understand the ideas, to appreciate the ideas. That's part of the Kedushas Hayom, to experience the Kedushas Hayom of the Chag. The basic position of the students, at first glance, makes perfect sense. If I'd have asked you, who's Nishal to who, you come in to a Beis Medrash, the Rebbe's there, he's teaching them every day. I mean, he's doing it on a regular basis. So who's doing who? Who's working for who? I'm teaching you. So I'm working for you. He's doing the malacha. In every malacha you have the worker and the recipient. There's a recipient. So who's the recipient? The recipient is the student. So therefore, that's what they were saying. And he's doing it on a regular basis, obviously. Whether he's getting paid or not, let's leave that aside. In terms of Baal of Imo, you don't have to be paying. Baal of Imo could be a favor. Nishalo. Does that... It means to say that you've agreed to do what would constitute a favor for somebody in terms of work. So your agreement is sufficient. That's Nishalo, because you can't break your agreement. You have to keep it. Rava's answer is that that's true. That I think we have to recognize there is an element of a shibud, that I'm doing something for you. Yeah, but the ultimate purpose, the ultimate benefit, I'm doing it for myself. That's an accident that you happen to gain. But that's not the end of the story. If that were the case, that I'm doing something for you, and that's it, so then I'm a shibud to you, but I'm really doing it for my own sake. It just so happens that in the course of doing there's a gain for you, but that's not a shibud, I'm not a shibud to you, I'm doing it for my own sake. And since that's the case, you see, you have to make a decision. Who's Meshubah to who? That's the question, because it's a very... Each one, there's an element of Shivat on both sides over here. See, there's an element of gain on both sides. So it's very close call. But apparently it can't be both. It's got to be one or the other. So he's saying that since that's the case, since the nature of this malacha is really being done for my sake and not for your sake, I'm the gainer. So then, and you're intrinsically connected to it, so then you're Meshubah to me. You're working for me. The nature of this work is for me, not for you. So while it's true that there's a gain, you could have that in many cases, where you could be gaining from a malacha. The fact that you're gaining from something, for example, waiters, they you have to give them the meal, so they're gaining. But that's the nature of the work is, they're still waiters. You can't say that changes the character of the activity. It's an accident. It's a byproduct. If that were the whole essence of the situation, then it would be different. So that's what he's saying. The essence of what's going on over here is not that I'm teaching you. The essence of what's going on over here is that I'm engaged in an activity where I'm using you, so to speak, the sparring partner effect, and it's for my benefit. So I'm the one who's benefiting, and you are at my disposal. Why isn't this enough? Why isn't this enough? That is to say, why is the factor of Masechta L'Masechta if that's the case. So let's assume there wasn't Masechta L'Masechta. Let's assume that that had to be done mutually. He didn't have that power of Masechta L'Masechta. Let's say there was a random system of Masechta. It's very, very interesting. That's what's a little bit bothersome, because if you're going to say that he's engaging in this activity for his own benefit, and since it entails them, and they're agreeing to be part of it, so they become nishal to him, okay, so we'll accept that. That determines it. That's more determinative. But it is in conjunction with the Masechta L'Masechta. That's what's a little bit troubling. That has to be explained. Well, why is that? The Gemara is saying that it has to be something which is manifest in the character of the activity, in the work, in the chafta, so to speak, of the avod itself. That is, the dominance, the coercive, he's got to be able, the shibud. Who's mishibud to who? Now, it's not enough to merely say that he's gaining from it, and that's why he's doing it. That could be true. That could be true if he was any teacher. Teacher is being hard, and he's teaching, and he's meshubba to the situation. But it could be that he derives tremendous enjoyment out of it, and that's why he's doing it. That's extraneous to the situation. That's motivation. That's just motivation. Yeah, that's not what we're saying. See, that, in other words, to merely say that you're doing it because it sharpens your mind and all of that is not enough. Because it has to be manifest in the activity itself. There's a cheftashel avoda over here, and someone is being coerced by someone. There's a giver and a receiver, you know. So that's what the Gemara is saying. Those two things come together. That his argument is that essentially you're meshubba to me. That you're involved in doing my work. Because I'm involved in this for my sake. But the fact that I'm involved in this for my sake is not enough if it doesn't express itself in some way. Because then it's just extraneous to the phenomenon. Then it's just an issue of motive. So it has to be expressible. So where is it expressible? I can dictate. And you can't stop me. That is an expression that the concept that this is all being done for his benefit is manifest in the character of the activity itself. Now we can understand Yarchei Kala. What happens on Yarchei Kala is, it may be that he's still doing it to sharpen. I mean, either you want to say that on Yarchei Kala he's not doing that. I don't know if you have to say that. Now it's just an ordinary case where I'm coming in to teach you and prepare you for Yom Tov. That would be simple. But I don't know. I think Yarchei Kala means to say, even if you say he's still doing it to sharpen his mind, the Miri also has another purpose over there. For his kavod, he's doing it. Whatever, he may have another reason why he wants to be giving a shiur. All right? But he no longer has the power to change Masechtos, so there's no manifestation. It's got to be a coercive element in the very hefta of the Malach itself. So he's lost that. You see, we raised that question. Why? Once you understand why the factor of Masechta L'Masechta, that means that he exercises control over them and their Meshubot to him in the very Malach itself. So then comes Yarchei Kala, he loses that power. And even if you say that he's still doing it for his own purposes, but we said that's not enough, that's just motivation. Now, however, the question is, what's the question? Of course, now the question is, so why don't we say it's a standoff? And because they don't have the power. They don't have the power to switch Masechtas either, so why don't we just say that there isn't either one? But no, now we're saying that they become the dominant, ones or whatever, and he becomes the worker, so to speak. He's then nishal to them. I think that what Mark said has validity. It's sort of that there's two claims over here. There's two shibudim. That is, the students have a shibud from the Rebbe, that he's teaching them. That was the basic claim. That was their argument was that basically you're doing the work, we're doing the gain. Their argument was that whatever reason you're doing it for, that's or the fact that you're benefiting from it, but the nature of the shibud is you're meshubad to teach us. His claim was that since he's doing it for his own gain, and he control, and that's something which can be translatable. See, that factor of his gain has to be translatable into something where it's manifest in the very nature of the activity. The fact that that's his motive is not enough. But it's got to be in the very nature of the activity itself that the fact that it's for his gain is manifest and how the whole thing is being conducted. So then they have to go along with him. Once they have to go along with him, so then they become nichna to him. That's the point. But once you remove that factor of being nichna to him, and then it's just a matter of what his motive is, and it's not translatable into the malacha, then he becomes meshubba to them. It reverts back. In other words, the factor of his teaching them is not regarded as being meshubba to them as long as it's being done for his own sake in a manner which is translatable into the very conduct of the activity. So when it's translatable and it expresses itself in the very conduct, then he drags them along to where he wants to go, and they have to go along with him in the malacha, so then they're nichna to him. But when he loses that power, so then what remains is that he may be, I don't care what his motive may be, that's irrelevant, but the power that he has is no longer translatable, or the motive that he has is no longer translatable. He can't maneuver them. So basically, he's teaching them. And the fact that he wants to do it because of his own gain, that's motivation. And then it becomes that he's meshubah to them. The determination goes by manifestation. If you agree to give a shiur to people in the shul, whatever it is, then you are nishal to them. And if you're doing it because of your own reasons and your happiness and the mitzvah, whatever it is, but the content of it, the character, the form, is a shibbut to them. Unless you want to say that no, that this is really, they're doing your malacha, and they're a shibbut to me. But then it has to be manifest itself. So they, I show you, I do things against their will. They don't want to do this, but they go along with it. So as soon as I have something in which expresses that they don't want to do it, and I force them to do it, so now they're meshubba to me. That changed the character of the activity. It's not the motive. That's what he was saying to them. It's not the motive. It's the fact that if you observe the activity, who's in control? It's who's in control. Who's doing for who? Of course they're gaining and doing it, but that doesn't matter. The power is being exercised by me. I'm forcing you to do things. So therefore, you're meshubba to me. However, if you remove that factor, then and now I'm still teaching you, but I can't move you around anymore. I've got to study. It doesn't matter. You see, it doesn't matter that they control the text. That was the question that we asked. They don't control the text either. So it should be a standoff. That was the question that we asked. Halacha dictates the text. That's fine. That doesn't matter. Because it's not their ability to dictate the text that makes them the one who's soliciting the favor from him. It's not that. It's the fact that they're receiving a service. He's teaching them. That's what it is. You see? So they don't have to control the text. But halacha controls the text. It's that when Kala comes along, it takes away his power. He has no power, so he can't force them, so they're no longer meshubba to him. Once they're no longer meshubba to him, so it remains what it is, an activity where he's teaching them. He's meshubba to teach them. His motive? Irrelevant. Just want to add that, theoretically one could raise a question, if that's the case, who's exercising the power over here? So even if he was being paid, yet it seems that if the Rebbe is being paid, so then he's definitely considered to be Baal Avimo, because he's subservient to them. I think that the idea is, because we're talking about Baal Avimo, and the fact that there's a institution of Schirus, and I am Niskar to you, independent of any other factor, that itself makes the fact that I'm your Sachir, means I'm with you, even if I can control everything. It doesn't matter anymore. Because once I accept money, that's a Shibud, which... gives me the shame sacher, that's definitely bala vimo. The shaila is because it's nishalo. And nishalo is a different kind of a concept. He doesn't have a shame. It's a very interesting idea altogether. Why that's considered to be bala vimo. Because what's the technical relationship over here? It's a favor. I'm doing you a favor. How does that make me bala of emo? And what's the connecting link over here? I'm not getting paid to do this. But nevertheless, we do say that there's a concept of being nishalo, that if I agreed. So my agreement is enough. But when it's because of an agreement, then it's not so clear. Then it has to be worked out who's nishal to who. And that's why you have the question, that he's not getting paid. But nevertheless, he's agreed. So normally that would be sufficient, because he's nichmat to them. He's meshubah to them. But if it's the kind of an activity, true it is that he's teaching them, but he's really doing it for his own sake. So then it's possible to reverse it, that they're really nishal to him. But that's only now you have to, who's got the upper hand over here? He has to be, only when he is exercising that control against their will, and that the fact that it's for his benefit actually expresses itself in the way the activity is conducted contrary to their will, then they're working for him. But if you remove that factor, then he has no way to express that idea of domination. Then he's subservient to them. He's teaching them. And the fact that what motivates him to do it is not definitive. That's not relevant over here. The way the Rambam learns, he says, "Arav, this is in Shel Bikadim Perik Sheni Alachadal. Arav Shu Makari Bertzono L'Talmidim. The Rav who does it voluntarily to the students, B'Cholei Sheyirza, whenever he wants. So apparently he's not bound to a set time. Whenever he wants, the Eza Masechta Sheyirza, and whatever Masechta he wants, V'Hoyu Kavuim Lavo Tamid." And the students had agreed. They were koveya to come, to learn with him in that way. V'nishmat lahem mesecht l'mesechta. Sounds like a repetition. V'nishmat lahem, well, he already said, v'ez mesechta sheyirtza. He seems to be repeating that. V'nishmat lahem mesecht l'mesechta. And he actually does go from a sechta to sechta. Why did Rambam have to say that? He already said the conditions. He lists the conditions in Halacha Dalet. That's the Rav who teaches Bertzono voluntarily to the students whenever he wants. So it's at his disposal. And whatever mesechta he wants. And they are set to come constantly. V'nishmat lahem. That's already said already. Whatever mesechta he wants. Now, there's two separate things, the Rambam says. Two separate things. One is to choose the Masechta. But that in itself is not enough, because it could be once you choose the Masechta, so then, okay, fine, you have the choice. But then we're stuck with that Masechta. We're set. Now, you can't switch. But he's saying not only does he get to choose, but he can switch arbitrarily. That's the factor. You see how much control he has. The fact that he can choose the Masechta in and of itself is good, is not enough. Because then once he makes the choice, and then, okay, there's a certain kvius now. He's kavua to learn that masechta. But let's say he doesn't want to. He wants to change. So he has to have the right to change the masechta as well. He's not saying that he actually changed it. It doesn't mean...
But that he could.
But that he could change it. He could change it. Not that he actually did change it. But arbitrarily he could change it. And they have nothing to say. They have nothing to say. So then they're nishal to him. In reality, there's two separate ideas. It's a very, very significant point. Choosing a masechta is a significant choice. Because once you choose, you can put a lot of effort. Yeah. That's one thing. So they may have that. Changing is another idea. That's a separate idea because should we change? That's a whole new question. It's a whole new question. One can have the right to choose. Does it mean he has the right to change? One may not have the right to choose, but it could be he has the right to change because he has to decide if it's working or not. Maybe it's not working. He saw the group, etc., etc. They're not, and that So even if he didn't have the right to choose, he could still be, but he has the right to change. It's two separate things. One doesn't necessarily always follow from the other. To change Masechtas is a complete... The way the Rambam has it, he has two situations. That the Rav, who's teaching something voluntarily at his discretion when he wants to teach, and they're coming, and he chooses the Masechta, and he also can change the Masechta. So there's Sheulin Etzlo. V'ein hu sho'olahen. Uviyama Perek, Shakol Boyan Lishmoa Inyan Oso Moed. But at that day, which is set, everybody comes on that day, the designated time. And then he teaches them, then he Sho'olahem. It would appear, the Rambam did mention that factor as well, that that he teaches when he wants to teach. And he teaches what he wants to teach. Of course, you know, you could ask a question, so is it both? What if you only have one without the other? What if they determine the time, but he can choose the Masechta and he can switch Masechtos? Well, Rashi didn't mention that fact. The Rashi simply says he sits and learns all day.
He's there for them all day.
He's there, yeah. The reason why the Rambam mentions the B'cholei Sheyirtza is because that too is an expression of his control over them, whenever he wants. So he calls the time, then they have to come. But apparently that's not enough. Because then it's not just that, it's two things. It's the they're subordinate to him in terms of the time, and they're subordinate to him in terms of the Masechta, the material. Then... It's then they're nishal to him. See, we're missing our understanding of the Rambam because the Rambam did not follow it up and say, but if he's the time and they do the, he didn't go on. He just left it at that. So the question, of course, is what if you have one of those two? I would venture to say that the Rambam means that time is a factor. That's b'chalei sheyirtza. But if they control the time, he must come in at this time. Then he's nichmat to them. The Rambam is giving you a profile because here's where what Mark is saying, there's sort of like a chazaka. In other words, if you want to use the term chazaka, he's teaching them. He's shol to them. What you need is a completely different situation in which they're shol to him, which means that they do not exercise any control. And because basically, if you want to put it purely in descriptive terms, their claim, so to speak, is stronger. He's teaching them. You're doing the work. You're teaching me. You're the teacher. You're shol to us. So he's saying they are shol to him if he's in complete control of the aspect. What are the two aspects? The two aspects are the time and the content. But if he's meshuba to them in any one, so then I would say, according to the Rambam, even though he doesn't take it that far, he doesn't say it, but he assumes you'll figure it out yourself. He makes a point about b'chol eisha yirta. And that's why for him, kala means that he loses both of those things. Because this is the time that's designated, so he's not designating the time. He designates the time, and he controls the activity. So they're meshubin, two things. They have to come when he wants. That's why he said, kvum lavo. They must come when he wants, against their will, and they must study what he wants, against their will. So I'm saying the Rambam requires both. According to the Rambam, basically speaking, a teacher teaches a student. You have the giver, you have the recipient. So the giver is the teacher, he's doing the work, they're the recipient. And I don't care what his reasons are. He is nishal to them. What he's saying is that we can conceive of a completely different situation in which even though there's teaching and they're learning, but they are completely at the disposal of the Rebbe. They must be at the disposal of the Rebbe. To be at the disposal of the Rebbe means that he controls the entire situation and they have no say. That would mean b'chol whatever he wants. And they have to go. They're kavum to go. So that means they don't want to go now. It's not good, but they have to go. He controls the two aspects of control in the situation are the time and the content. And according to the Rambam, it has to be both. I would say it has to be both. The case of Kala would seem that he loses both, because that's the set time. That time is set, because you got to learn then. That how see the Rambam learned that the that Kala. See, the way the Rambam learned Kala was the two elements. That it's Kavua. It's the Zman is Kavua, the Zman is Kavua, and the content is Kavua. That's how the Rambam learned the Gemara. Right, we're continuing now in the Gemara. Maremer Bachanina. Oger Kudnaita Bechozoi. All right, he rented out a donkey. All right, so that's a case of he was a socher, schirus. As far as the issue, we're interested in the issue of balavima, so it wouldn't make any difference whether it's a she'ela or whether it's a schirus or any shomer for that matter. Okay, so what happened next? Nafak ledluye te'una badayu. So he went out to help them load the load onto the donkey, onto the mule. That forms the basis of the whole issue. Okay, when apparently he went out on his own. He wasn't asked to do it. We've learned before that if you borrow something from someone and you ask him even for a glass of water to get you water, so then that already renders it into balavimo. But here he wasn't asked to do it. He did it on his own, of his own accord. Continuing the case, Poshuba Umis. Now the people who rented it were Poshea, were negligent in their Shmira, and the animal died. Asulakame de Rava, so they came before Rava. Chayvinu, and he said that they're chayv. He paskin that they're chayv. Lechora, on the one hand, it's Pshia, so Pshia, you'd say that he's chayv. But, what about the issue of Balavimo? So you have two issues over here. Is this a case of Balavimo? And secondly, even if it is Balavimo, does Balavimo work when it comes to Pshia? Okay? Amru le Rabbanu le Rava. So the rabbis said to Rava, Pshia bivalami. It's a case of Pshia bivalam. The issue of Pshia bivalam is a machlokas. You remember, if you go back to Tzadik Hay for a minute, towards the bottom of the page, Itmar, Pshia Bivalam, Pligi Bar of Achav Ravina. Pshia Bivalam, it's a machlokas Rav Achav and Ravina. Chad Amachayev, Vachad Amar Potter. All right, then the Gemara has a lengthy explanation of the machlokas in terms of the Mikra, you know, how it works out in terms of the Psukim. Basically, it seems that we paskin that Pshia Bivalam means that you barred an animal and you barred the owner too, so it's a case of balavimo. And therefore you're exempt from all accidents, that's for sure. The only question is, are you exempt from accidents? But what about if you're poshea? Does it go so far as to exempt you even in a case where you were poshea? That was at issue. Now the Rabbanan in this particular case are contesting Rava, so to speak, and they're saying that chayev, it's a case of pshia bivalam, implying that what? That since it's Pshia Bivalam, he should be Pata. And they were disagreeing with the Psak of Rava. Ichsif. So Rava was embarrassed. The embarrassment indicates that he agreed that Pshia Bivalam, and he was wrong to Paskin that they were Chayiv, that they should be Pata. But then the Gemara says, L'sofi gloi milsa dilameser te'una hu denafak. At the end, it became apparent that Lemesar Te'una Hu Denafak. He says, Lemesar Te'una Hu Denafak, Liro Shelo Yirbu B'masa. That is, that the purpose of him going out, because that's the basis for the Ba'olavimo factor. So he went out and he seemingly participated with them. Seemingly, therefore, he was working with them. Thus, you would say it's balavimo. But then the Gemara is saying that it turned out that he didn't go out for that purpose. That is, he went out his motives were completely selfish. He just wanted to see that the load should not be too great for the animal. It wasn't because he wanted to help them. So while he may have helped them in the process, but that wasn't the point. The point was purely selfish, which, let's say you're borrowing an animal or you're borrowing a car and you're going to load it with stuff. So you might go along with them either to help them to load the car, in which case that would be balavimah, because as soon as you do malacha for the borrower, then it's balavimah. But he's saying in this case that since he didn't go out for that purpose, his only purpose was to make sure that it wasn't too much of a burden. It was for his selfish purposes, and therefore it's not balavimah. All right, now the Gemara says, Hanicha l'man d'yamar. Well, see, according to the Yigloi Milsich, it turns out then that Rava was correct. You see? Rava ruled that they're chayiv, because it's pshia. Then the Gemara counted that it's pshia bevalov, and then ichsef, he became embarrassed. But Lasof, at the end of the day, it turned out that, according to the Gemara, that he was right, because the owners had only gone out not to really help them, but just to for their own purposes. So therefore, the embarrassment was unnecessary. Okay? Now the Gemara is going to try and deduce from this. Hanicha, lamandi yamar pshia bevalam pata. Mishim hachi ichsef. So now the Gemara is asking a question on the mandi yamar. The one who says that pshia bevalam is pater. So then, from Rava's original reaction, when Rava thought that it was a case of balavimo, and that he had made a mistake, right? And he was embarrassed. So that embarrassment indicates that the halacha is that balavimo is pater, and he made a mistake. He said chayev, but balavimo is pater. So the Gemara is saying, according to that, honey, chalaman yama, Rava's embarrassment is okay, is in line with where it works well according to the man yama holes, pshi bevalam is pater. El man yama chayev, but according to man yama who says he's chayev, amai ichsef. Why was he embarrassed, according to you? It's a kasha. Because according to you, he paskin correctly. That was the correct psak. When they thought it was a case of balavimo, okay? Before it was revealed why they had gone out. So he was correct, according to you. So what's the ichsef? That's a kasha. So he answers, lo mifsha pashuba, ela ignuve ignuv. Umesa kedarka, Beganov. So he learns the case differently. The case was not a case where it was poshea. Rather, it was stolen. And it died kedarka. It died in the natural manner. Beganov. Beganov havi. V'yosu l'kame de Rava. I mean, he has a different version of the story. And they came before Rava. V'chayvinu. And he said chayv. So in other words, they have a different version of the story that really it wasn't the case of pshia. It was a case where it was stolen, and it died of natural causes by the ganav. And then they all came before Rava, and Rava said chayev. And Amru le Rabbanon le Rava, and then the Rabbanon said to Rava, Gineva bevalam he. It's Gineva bevalam. Ichsef. And that was why he got embarrassed. In other words, if that's the case, then it's not a question on anybody, because it's not a case of pshia. According to both versions, there was the ichsef fact, and no one's denying that. Okay, but was the ichsef because he held that pshia bevalam is pater? Was the ichsef the fact that he became embarrassed? Was it an indication, a reflection of the psak halacha that the pshia bevalam is really pater? If so, it presents a kasha to the man yam who holds that pshia bevalam is chayiv. That was the Gemara's first deduction. But the answer, according to the second version, that it wasn't the case of pshia. So it was a case of ganav gneva. And mesa kedark, it's a case of ones. In that case, so everybody maintained, there's no machlokas, that if it's a case of Baalim, Emo, so then he's Pater, you see? So therefore, according to that version, he was Ichsef because he forgot about the fact of Baalim Emo. L'safi gloi milsa de l'meisa tunehu de nafak. And the Gemara just adds that, but it's the same point in both versions. The same point in both versions that at the end of the day, it turned out that the embarrassment of Rava was unfounded, because that's this new point. That's the chiddush, that even though he went out to assist them in the loading, but it was done, he didn't do it to really help them. He did it to protect his own interests. So therefore, that would not be considered a case of Bala Vima. Okay, we're doing the Meiri. That's on page 354. Zeshe bi'arnu b'shmir b'valam. All right, what we've explained concerning shmir b'valam shepata, hashomer. Losov dava shashoel shalu osachro. Okay, this apparently is a chiddush, the way he learns it. Do we say that it's only if the borrower either borrowed the owner or hired the owner? Ela filu nishal hu lo me elav b'sha she'ela. That even if he lent himself out, so to speak, of his own accord, just volunteered to do it at the time of the she'ela, hareza she'ela b'volam. That's point one. That's the first chiddush of this Gemara. That he wasn't asked to do this, he simply went out of his own accord. Mayatas now, yotze imo b'shah she'ela, l'sakein imo b'masoi. If he went out at the time of the she'ela to help to arrange the load, o l'sayo b'aliyoso, or to help him to lift it onto the animal. Ukiyotze b'zeh, and the like. Hareza shmir b'valam. So that's considered shmir b'valam. Apparently, Miri considers this a chiddush in its own right, because he wasn't asked to do that. We hadn't raised that question on our own. We just took it for granted. But now the Gemara is being more specific about that. Is it only if I hire you or borrow you, so to speak? Well, what if you do it on your own? Aval im lo haisa kavanasa b'kach. But if that was not his kavana, el levaker b'masoi, imhu gadol yosemidai. But rather, his kavana was to check it out. He wanted to make sure that the load was not too heavy. Afilo siya b'hakel maso, even if he helped him in making it lighter, help him to lift it or whatever. Now, his intention in doing that was just to make sure that he wouldn't overburden the animal. Olusakno al habehema, or he wanted to make sure that it was secured on the animal, because it could cause damages. He was concerned. So in the course of this, he actually did help. Howul v'ein kavanaso el levaker asamasoi, since his whole intention was only to check the load, ain't a shmira bevolim. This is not considered shmira bevolim. Shalonasa bezer shol. El liatzmo shalolahatin behemto yosemidai. Again, ain't a shmira bevolim. Such a case would not be shmira bevolim, where he did it for his own purposes. Shalonasa bezer shol, because he did not become shaul. The lender did not become shaul. El liatzmo, so to speak. He's only lent out to himself. I'm not lent out to you. I'm lent out to myself. It's an expression, obviously. Shalolahatin behemto yosemidai. That I just went out there to make sure that you didn't abuse my animal. Didn't load it up with too heavy a load. But nevertheless, in the course of doing so, I did help you. But that wasn't my intention. You have to assume, according to the Meiri, that which he did would be sufficient to render it bala v'imo if his intention was to help. It's not that he didn't do enough. That's not the issue. He did, but except I didn't do it for you. I did it for my purposes. The chiddush over here is that even if it met all the tests, that is, for example, we've already learned that bala v'imo must be either simultaneous with the ma'isa she'ela or prior to it, that he was nishalo. So here too, the Meiri would say, he's helping him at a time where it would be considered at the time of the she'ela. It would work. It's not after the she'ela. So you just have to figure out how it would be Shah Shela, that at the time that he's helping him, that's the very time when the Shela begins, commencing. So that's not a problem. So thus, the only question is the activity he's engaged in sufficient to render it into Bolavimo? And the Meiri is learning that no, because he's only doing it for his own sake. All right, we're doing the Rav Yonason, brought down in the Shita Mekubetzas. Dilamesar, Tawane Nafak, Koloma, Liros, Emyetenu Osam, Yosef Mechdei Mason. Same idea, to see, he went out to see whether they would load it with too heavy a burden. Velo Nishal Lahem Klal, Lasayam Bishlichus. And he was not lent out to them or borrowed to them at all to help them with their mission. Elamei Elov, Beloshum Dibur Baolam. But he went out of his own accord without any verbal stipulation, without any talk. Shim Hoya wrote, So Lohoya Messiah. Because if he didn't want, he wouldn't have. He wouldn't have. He didn't feel like it. He wouldn't have helped them. In other words, indeed, he did help them, but there was no agreement to do so. And it's not considered to be she'ela b'valam unless he agreed with them. He made a deal with them. Uchsiven, it says she'eris Yisrael lo yasu avla. The Gemara brings that down in Kedushin. It's a pasuk that when a Jew gives his word, you can rely on it. The remnant of Israel does not do anything crooked. Aval imlo hisna, but if he didn't make any agreement, he didn't give his word. Lo mikri nishal klal, he's not considered nishal at all. According to the Meiri, it doesn't matter if he went out of his own accord. He doesn't mention that factor. According to the Meiri, it doesn't matter if he went out of his own accord. It's still considered bal avimo. The only question is, if he went out for the sake of the borrower or for his own personal, selfish motives. That's the determining factor. According to Rabbi Yonason, it depends upon agreement. That is, if he went out of his own accord, according to Rabbi Yonason, if he went out of his own accord, even if he did so for the sake of to help, it's not considered bal avimo. According to Rabbi Yonason, there's got to be either schiras, that's for sure. That's easy. But it doesn't have to be schiras. No one's maintaining that Baal Avimo has to be through schiras. It's nishalo. And what now? He's saying that in order to be nishalo, there's got to be an agreement. It's interesting. He learns the chiddush of this case completely differently. That the chiddush, it's not because he was doing it for who. We don't care who he's doing it for. Then according to him, if he made an agreement, but he's only doing it for his own personal benefit, his own personal reasons, then with Lachari, that would be part of the machlokas, that according to the Meiri, even if he agreed. But he's only doing it to check for his own purposes. Although one could ask that question according to the Meiri. Let's say, because the Meiri doesn't care whether he agreed or didn't agree. The Meiri didn't raise that point. We have to figure it out ourselves. But we have two distinct ways of learning the Gemara. It's very interesting then. It seems two completely different ways of learning. And it's focusing on the issue of a case where the owner is indeed involved with helping in one way or another, but it's not considered bal avimo. And we have two different explanations. According to the Meiri, it has to do with why he's doing it. Is he working? He's doing it for himself. He's not doing it for you. According to Rav Yonason, no, it doesn't matter who he's doing it for. The question is if he's just doing it on his own. Initiative, without any type of an agreement, framing it, that's the issue for him. The Rambam in Perek Beis, She'elim Pikadon, Halacha Beis, Hishil Behemto, Ohiskira, Lamasui, V'yotzi Imo L'sa'ed Hashoel, Ohasocher, V'liton Imo B'masoi, Harez Hashmir B'valim. The imyotz levaker hamase bulvad, the liver shalo yitenu ala yeser min aroy einashmir bevalim. So he's learning exactly, or the Meiri is learning exactly like the Rambam. However, you want to put it, that for him that's the issue. Thus, we can deduce that Yotze Imo without an agreement is not a problem. That's not the problem, because then the Ram would have mentioned that. The Ram does not mention this factor. So that if the owner voluntarily assists, that is sufficient to render it Bala Imo, according to the Rambam. The only thing is that in that case, it must be that he's doing it to help you, not to check. Let's ask a question, though. Let's say there was an agreement. Or even I was sahur. Either way you want. And I'm only doing it. Let's ask that question. Let's say you ask me, help me with the thing. Or you even pay me. But I'm only doing it levaker, you know, for the same reason. Would that also be enough to remove it from Bala Imo, or no? It's only because he did it voluntarily. I would say that would have been a bigger chiddush. It would have been a bigger chiddush to say that even though you agreed to help, but still, since you're only doing it for your own purposes, it's not nishalah, that would have been a bigger chiddush. So clearly, that's not the case. That is, once I agree to help you, it doesn't matter why I'm agreeing to help you. I'm nishal to you. Because the agreement, and certainly the schiras, is sufficient to create that connection of Bala Imo. And then that's it's just a matter of motive. In that situation, it's motive. A guy can have many motives. I could have a lot of motives why I could be doing it for my own purposes, because I like to be in your fields or whatever. I like to be. I'm working in your house, and you have this big TV screen that's always playing. Whatever the case, that's irrelevant. What's the difference? What the motives are? Motives are not the point. Who cares? Bala Imo. He's contracted himself to help. Then I would say, the Meiri, the Rambam, nobody would maintain that it's a problem. It's always Bala Imo. What creates the issue over here is that it's absent an agreement. And the Meiri agrees with Rabbi Yonasan that that's the fact, that it's absent an agreement. Except when there's absent an agreement, what is the issue? Is the issue, because there's no agreement, that's the whole issue? It's only voluntary? Or that was the Rabbi Yonasan, makes that the essence? Or no? Once there's no agreement, then it depends. You see, then it depends. So then they have a Maravshach question. You see, Rabbeinu Yonasan's position can sort of attack, so to speak, the Meiri and say, Maravshach, do you require an agreement or don't you require an agreement? I require an agreement. So that's it. But you, do you require, if you do not require agreement, then you say voluntary, which is what you do say, is sufficient. So then what difference does it make what the purpose is? Because in a case where there is an agreement, you admit that purpose doesn't play a role. So now you're saying that agreement doesn't matter one way or the other. If, on the other hand, you're saying that when there's no agreement, it doesn't work. So then who cares even if he's doing it to help him? There's no agreement. Mamanov Shach, so to speak. The way, again, I would subject the critique at this stage of the analysis of the Meiri is Elafilo Nishal Hu Lo Me'elav B'Shah She'elah. Okay, he says b'shas she'ela. That takes care of the problem that this is being done b'shas she'ela. So hareza she'ela b'volam, that she'ela b'volam. So this is the point of contention between the Meiri and Rabbeinu Yonasan. But at first glance, I think Rabbi Yonasan's position, has the upper hand at first glance, because you're now saying that you don't require that he be solicited. He's going out of his own accord. Well, if he's going out of his own accord, so then what difference does it make what the purpose is? And if you maintain that the purpose is also part of it, so then it should be so even if there's an agreement. Yet when there's an agreement, we say, what do I care? It doesn't matter. So then now you're saying that lacking an agreement is not a problem. It doesn't matter. Oh, so then, Maravshach. So what do I care why he's doing it? He's helping. That's the point. The point is, he's engaged in helping the other person, and he's doing it voluntarily. So what do I care what his motive is? From a purely analytical standpoint, the position of Rabbi Yonasan is not ambivalent. That's it. He's just taking a position that's the chiddush. That the chiddush is that it can't be voluntary. It's got to be solicited. Okay. So then you have to deal what's the hobby, what's the maskana, fine. But that's his position. However, if you take the position of the Meiri and the Rambam, that it doesn't have to be solicited, it can be voluntary, so then it becomes ambivalent. That voluntary help, it depends. If the voluntary help is done for for your purposes, then it's a bal avimo. If the voluntary help is done for my purposes, then it's not. So then why? What's the difference? That you see, that position has more ambivalence to it. It's not absolute.